Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Lucid Libertarian with Lorianne Show. Please be sure to tune in Sunday nights from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, to discuss current events, news, and political opinion with Lucid Libertarian flair. Be prepared, folks. We often go into an optional extended third hour. This show advocates for liberty, freedom, our Constitution, Bill of Rights, and limited government, while speaking against corporate and government corruption, tyranny, and the globalist Great Reset agenda that undermines our precious American sovereignty. Discussions here are unscripted and free-flowing, so sometimes conversations wander off in unpredictable directions. Would you like to call in and share your thoughts and be part of the conversation? The number is 563-999-3698. Again, that is 563-999-3698. Press number 1 and you'll be added to the queue. Please also like and follow my Lucid Libertarian with Lorianne page on Facebook. You can help me battle their freedom-loathing censorship by visiting my page regularly, along with reacting, commenting, and sharing my posts. Thank you so much for listening, but please sit tight and don't go anywhere. We'll be back in a few minutes to kick off the show.
Imagine waking up in a trunk. What is grooming? What if I told you we had a 40% increase of human and sex trafficking in our country due to COVID lockdowns? We already had high numbers to begin with. One's Purpose is an amazing organization pounding the pavement every day, helping these survivors get help. Unfortunately, they do not have the funding they need for a safe house. In the state of Oregon, we have zero safe houses for these survivors who have endured the most heinous of crimes. The time is now to get involved. The time is now to help stop human trafficking. Please go to onespurpose.com to get involved. If you need help and if you know someone who needs to get help, please contact 541-221-3448. Make a donation. Make a difference.
NWCR Radio has been on the air since 2006 and with Conservative Nation Media since 2013. Now, NWCR continues as the owner of CNM with the news that the lamestream lying liberal media chooses not to tell you because the truth has nothing to do with the agenda that they are all pushing. We will tell the truth no matter what the liberal left has to say about it or what the truth is. Being banned off of YouTube for telling the truth with my updates and off of Facebook several times, we have our badges of honor that we keep pushing the envelope for on our show. My co-host, Lucid Libertarian Lorianne, and I, along with my band of callers, have great shows with great information for America on each episode. We are NWCR Radio, Friday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio through Conservative Nation Media, where America always wins.
I do. I care about future generations. I care about things. I want to do a song right now. I actually wrote this in April, and I'm going to keep singing it for a while because it makes me feel good. And so let's do it.
give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government. The government can. And who can tax the sunrise?
Who can tax the trees?
Let you run a business and collect up all the fees. The government.
The government.
Oh, the government can.
The government can.
And the government can, cause they mix it up with lies and make it all taste good. Just throw away the Constitution. I wrote that, thank you. Who can give a bailout?
Tell us to behave.
And make the founding fathers roll over in their grave. I don't care if you hate me, I'm gonna sing it anyway. Oh, the government can. And the government can. Cause it makes it up with lies and make it all yummy, 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 yummy. Everything we make, they're all power hungry and malicious. Their economics are fictitious. Soon we'll have to eat our fishes. Chicago, how's that taste, kids?
Delicious.
Who can be a failure?
Who can be a failure?
In so many ways. And instead of getting fired, hey, we'll give ourselves a raise. Kentucky, you know what I'm talking about. Oh, the government can. And the government can go to mix it up. I did the choreography myself. And your Uncle Sam can, cause he mixes it with lies to make himself look good. And I feel so good, cause the government says I should.
He's even older than I thought.
Folks, please, Barker is dead, and I'm your president, Joe Biden.
It looks like a Halloween decoration.
Oh, come on, man. Now, welcome to The Price is Rising, where you guess how much the cost of common household goods has changed during my pregnancy. Because guess what? My Nodlix is working. Let's bring out our showcase model, Trixie. So pretty, beautiful. She's 25, but doesn't look a day over 17. I love kids. Okay, let's meet our contestants.
Hey, I'm Nate. I'm from Norfolk, Nebraska.
I used to drive an 18-wheeler through Norfolk.
I don't think you did.
Who's next?
Hi, I'm Chip. I'm from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
I used to work the oil fields in Tulsa.
No, you didn't.
Okay, who's next? Who are you?
I'm Martha, and I'm from Grove City, Ohio.
Oh, I once captured a Cratch rat. Sasquatch in Grove City.
That doesn't even make any sense.
Where's Jackie? Jackie, are you here?
Who, Jackie?
She was going to be here. Jackie? Anyway, let's see our next item.
First item.
Ah, boneless chicken breasts. 3 years ago, you could get that for a dollar. How much do you think they cost now?
$5.15, Crypt Keeper. I mean, President Joe Biden.
$8.40.
$10.60, sir.
Let's see the actual price. $8.44. Chip is correct. Oops, wait. It just went up to $10.60. Now Nate is right.
Yeah! Yeah!
God love you. Bidenomics is working. Next we have something that that we're all familiar with. It's a giant plastic garbage bag used to pour gasoline. That fuel smells almost as good as you, Trixie. You know, I'd hit on you if you weren't sleeping with Hunter already. I love kids. Now, contestants, guess the price.
$87.50, Gollum. I mean, President Biden.
$93.
Hold on, what happened?
Biden's administration shut down another pipeline and the price went up again.
Oh, come on, man. I wouldn't pay that much for a plastic bag full of anything.
Hunter has.
Never mind. I'm going to outlaw gas stoves and gas cards so we won't need gasoline anyway. Bidenomics is working.
Why do you keep saying that? Who are you whispering to?
Our next item is one of the most expensive things money can buy. A dozen eggs. Come on, man. Where's the other egg?
I tried to steal one. They're extremely valuable.
All right. How much do you think that costs?
$2.95, Methuselah. I mean, President Biden.
$3.50. $4.
And the actual price is? $6.70.
$6.70 for eggs? Looks like I'm having corn pops for breakfast.
Corn pop? Where is he?
Corn pops. You know, the food.
I thought you were talking about Corn Pop the dude. Oh, you made the hair on my leg stand up.
What are you talking about?
Oh, I know about corn pop and about roaches and about the hair on my legs. Bidenomics is working.
How is it working? All the prices keep going up.
Oh, come on, man. Lots of prices are coming down. Guess the price of hotel junk fee.
What's a hotel junk fee?
Who cares about hotel junk fees? Is that like when they charge you for the continental breakfast?
Let's see, the actual price. No. No hotel junk fees. Bidenomics is working.
None of this makes any sense. Everyone is getting poorer because of your policies.
That's a bunch of malarkey. I got a lot richer. I got 10% for the big guy. And Zelensky got much richer. Guess how much I sent to Ukraine?
$40 billion.
$80 billion? I don't know. Infinity billion dollars.
I'm still sending them more. So Chip is the closest without going over.
How are you even hosting this show right now? Who's in charge while you're not at the White House?
Kamala is in charge, just like when I'm at the White House. Well, that's it for today's episode of Jeopardy. I'm Joe Biden, reminding you to get your transgender athletes spayed and neutered before they compete in female sports.
What's he talking about?
No idea.
I don't disagree with him.
Being spayed, it's like a hysterectomy. I think it's more of a disadvantage because they stick to your legs when you run.
Patmos Capital Partners is a real estate investment firm with over $300 million of assets under management. Patmos prides themselves in putting their residents and investors' needs before their own. They are raising capital for additional investment opportunities. Connect with them at patmoscp.com/BabylonB.
All right, all right, all right. Sorry for that delay there. I forgot to unmute my phone for there for a minute. Welcome to the Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann Show. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight. Here we are. The guest line is working. Unlike Friday night on Robert's show, Conservative Nation Media, unlike last night on Donnie's show, Beyond the Mainstream, nobody could call into the guest line. But today, I am fortunate enough that people can call into the guest line. So that's good news. But the bad news is the chat room isn't working. When I try to fire up the chat room, I get server error 404, file or directory not found. The resource you were looking for might have been removed, had its name changed, or is temporarily unavailable. So apparently, I guess they, Blog Talk Radio must have fixed the problem with the guest line, perhaps. I don't know if anybody else has still had any problems or not today with calling into the guest line, but if they fix the guest lines, I guess that's the priority. But in the process, they must have apparently broken the chat room. So if you're out there and you're looking for the chat room, it's not there. It won't load. It's not my fault. I didn't forget. I've been trying. I've been refreshing all of that, reloading the studio up, and it just will not load up that chat room. So there, I encourage you to call in 563-999-3698. Again, that is 563-999-3698. And then you can kick back and listen, or you can press 1 on your keypad. That raises your hand on the switchboard, lets me know that you would like to join the conversation. We got Mike and Joe Gibson raising their hand. I see you. I'll bring you on momentarily. And then also on the switchboard, we got Gunslinger, and we got Robert. Robert's just raising his hand now. I'll bring the three of you on in here in a short little while. And I also have a Skype number kicking back listening. So thank you for making your way in and calling in. And like I said, sorry guys, the chat room's down. I could try refreshing later, see if maybe by some magic wand that Blog Talk uses to get the chat room working later. Who knows? But I'll just try to periodically see if it'll load up or not. Anywho, so of course, yet another week of plenty of potential topics to talk about in the news. And so, yeah, we had another balloon flying up about, what is, I think they said, between 40, 45,000 feet or something, that was discovered flying over Utah. But our government assures us that it's no problem. It's harmless. It's a harmless balloon. It couldn't maneuver itself. So just, you know, let it go on by. No big deal. They don't know whose balloon it is. They didn't know what the purpose is. They know nothing about it, but apparently it's harmless. Don't worry about it. Okay. We believe you, government. We always believe the government. let's see, in other news, article that states 70% of the largest U.S. cities lack funds to cover costs. Pensions, health care are the majority of their debt. Federal Reserve on all this stuff, right? So, yeah, 70% of the largest U.S. cities lack the funds to cover their costs. Wow, I wonder why that might be. They're blowing their budgets on something. Pensions might be one thing. Health care, that's a pretty big one, especially if you're providing health care for maybe, I don't know, tens of thousands of illegal immigrants that are flooding these U.S. cities, these sanctuary cities. Maybe that's part of the cost increase as well. I don't know. But that's what they say. We can get into that a little later if we want. House Chairman slams the IRS for lax security with private taxpayer data. Oh, imagine that. The IRS, potentially hackable, not securing our data? Oh my gosh. But we can trust them, right? Everybody make sure to file your taxes. pay the federal income taxes that you don't actually really owe if you're a United States citizen working here inside of the United States, earning your income domestically. But you better make sure to file those taxes, you know, so that the IRS can not securely house your taxpayer data. We should feel very confident about that, right? Then also, I read an article. This one was pretty interesting. So you know how Southern California, it's been downpour raining. There's been a lot of flooding issues and all that this winter after a long drought and stuff. And, of course, they're blaming it on climate change, right? It's climate change. It's climate change. We go from drought to downpour rain and flooding, way above average normal rain. So, of course, it's climate change to blame for that, right? Well, maybe not, because guess what? There was a weather modification cloud seeding program in the Santa Ana River watershed area, and their schedule on when they were doing this cloud seeding really coincidentally coincides with all this heavy rain and flooding going on in Southern California. I don't know, but it can't possibly be that. Weather modification is just a nutty conspiracy theory, everybody. It's not a thing. It doesn't really happen, except for when they admit that they're doing it and they release a schedule and, hey, apparently it's working. You don't want drought anymore? Here we go. Let's do a bunch of weather modification cloud seeding. Oh, wait a minute. It's raining too much and it's flooding and creating a bunch of damage that way instead? Oh, well, you know, beggars can't be choosers. You ask for the rain, right? Good Lord. So that one was kind of interesting. And then we had the first private company-funded moon lander touch down on the lunar surface. So that's pretty interesting. But apparently it flopped over on its side. But, hey, they consider that a success, right? You know, doesn't matter if it falls down on its side. It was unmanned. But, you know, if it was manned, then maybe it would have been a big deal, right? And that's, of course, if you believe that, you know, they're actually sending missions to the moon. But that's a debatable thing as well. But pretty interesting. And then it also lends the question, okay, so if a private company can do this, what are we paying NASA for? That's a good question, isn't it? I think it should be more privately funded. I think that there's a lot of companies and businesses out there that would rise to the occasion when it comes to space exploration, when it comes to going to the moon, when it comes to going to Mars, whatever the heck they want to do. If NASA is out of the way and taxpayers aren't funding, you know, these huge budgets for NASA, then guess what? You know, that would get rid of the monopoly, and there'd be a lot of companies that would, you know, like I said, rise to the occasion. I don't know. Just a libertarian-leaning thought there, you know, but of course I'm always wrong, right? Because we can't have libertarians being right about anything and not having a government-funded NASA and have private companies surge forth and do space exploration and all that. I don't know, maybe not even hire Nazis. That would be a good thing, too. Private companies, you know, maybe they wouldn't be so inclined to hire former Nazis like NASA did. Anyway, on to other things. Another interesting story, former NRA chief Wayne LaPierre misspent the gun rights group's money, owes more than $4 million. That's not good. So the the NRA chief pretty much said, I'll just take some of those donations and spend it any way I want to the tune of $4 million. Anybody that's an NRA member shouldn't be upset about that. Then I also had to laugh at this one. So apparently in New York, they made a musical about Trump, his ex-wives, and Stormy Daniels. That premiered in New York. I have to laugh. I mean, I just wonder. I got to see if I can find out if that musical is even making any money at all. Who is going to it? Who is going to see that? I mean, I tend to be a fan of a good musical. I am. I've always have been. I've always liked a good musical. But I don't know. I strongly suspect that this musical is going to be a pass. I'm kind of thinking might not be worth spending any money in New York to go and see that. There's so many other shows. I highly doubt that this musical is going to be any good. But I just found that comical that they actually made a musical out of Trump and his ex-wife and Stormy Daniels. Let's see. And again, in New York City, a state appeals court rejects non-citizen voting law. So apparently, the appeals court, they don't want to let non-citizens vote in New York. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Everybody, get upset. Get mad. They're not going to let citizens vote. Oh, my goodness. Be upset. Be very upset. Then moving on to Joe Biden. He had to give away his second dog that he got as a puppy, Commander, because Commander, I believe, had 24 incidences of biting White House staff and Secret Service, drawing blood in some cases, and so being too aggressive. So this is the second dog, that they got as a puppy. After they had to give up their other dog, what was the other dog's name? I'm forgetting offhand at the moment. Maybe I'll remember in 2 seconds. But so they got Commander as a puppy, and Commander is too aggressive and biting people and everything. So what is that to me is very indicative of Biden not being very good about having his dogs trained, taking good care of them. If Biden is a confused individual, then I guess apparently both of his dogs have been very confused and losing the temper, kind of like Biden does. Just out of nowhere, suddenly starts yelling at reporters and things like that. So I guess the two dogs now have fallen victim to that same mentality. They're copying him. So I think maybe Biden needs to be put on a list of cannot own a dog. Should not, cannot, do not do it. And I'm kind of wondering, now that this is the second dog, and you never hear anything about her rehoming these dogs. Are these dogs still having behavioral issues like this? And you know that they got the money for, like, the best trainers on the planet. So I don't get it. And these are German Shepherds. German Shepherds are known to be very loyal dogs. So I don't get it. I really don't get it. Poor dogs. I feel bad for these dogs. In local news in Oregon, I'm sure this is going to be a big shocker to all of you guys listening out there. Huge shocker to hear this. Oregon ranks last in the country on student math and reading in study of 30 states. So they studied, and Oregon wins the prize for being dead last in math and reading. Big shocker. I don't know. Maybe that's what happens when you have a governor, now actually a second governor, removing math and English comprehension as graduation requirements. Our previous governor, Dictator Brown, she is the one that said that requiring math and reading is racist because apparently if you are a black person, you are not capable of learning math and English comprehension. So, you know, as well as somebody that's white. So it's racist to require that of you. And so they suspended those requirements. And now our current MaxiPad governor, Kotek, she extended it for another 4 years. So this is going to go on until 2028. Lovely. And meanwhile, you know, I guess I would say this right now, that if you are planning to have children and you are thinking of moving to Oregon, don't do it. Don't move to Oregon if you want your children to actually get a quality education. If you want your child to actually be required to be proficient in basic math and reading comprehension, English comprehension, if you want your child to have that kind of basic understanding and even a semi-adequate education, then Oregon is the last place you want to move to. Just saying. And there's other reasons too, but, you know, that's a pretty good one. So, yeah, duh on Oregon for that. Be very, very proud, former Governor Brown. Be very, very proud, MaxiPad Governor Kotek. You know, for that study coming out on how effective that policy of yours is. I talked about this on other shows. George Soros, Mr. Soros himself, is reportedly going to be purchasing $400 million worth of debt, becoming the largest stakeholder in radio broadcast network Odyssey. Now, why this is relevant is Odyssey is a parent company of iHeartRadio, and iHeartRadio is the parent company of Blog Talk Radio that we're using. So Mr. Soros, Mr. Liberal Leftist World, New World Order, WEF Soros, is wanting to get his influence in these radio networks and platforms that are often used by conservatives. Since we're so muzzled in so many avenues and so many platforms, things like Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, people that publish their podcasts on iHeartRadio and any number of other affiliates, because they're so censored, he's getting his hands in there. So that's not something to look forward to. There's, of course, a lot more stuff that I couldn't fit into the show description that we could get into, but I do want to bring some of our people that have been raising their hands and kicking back, listening, and being patient before bringing them on. So let's see, and we got Boyd raising his hand now as well, so I'm going to go ahead and start bringing y'all in. Mike, I'm bringing you on in. Joe Gibson.
Okay.
Hello.
Okay.
And Robert.
Hello.
And
let me,
Boyd.
Let me tell you something.
Howdy do.
Hey, Mike, before you get into your topic, I got one question for Lorianne. Lorianne, do you know that you don't have a chat room in BTR right now?
Yes, I do. It is
you
not working.
10 minutes.
Yeah, I mentioned it earlier. When I try to load up the chat room, I get server error 404, file or directory not found. So apparently
okay.
they fixed the call-in issue. Yeah, with that, but then they broke the chat, apparently.
Actually,
I am unable to open it up on my end. So if you want to participate, you got to call in tonight, folks.
Okay, so
okay.
Lorianne, it's not that they haven't fixed it. It's that it's broken for different people, okay? For instance, I gave you an example. The guy that I do my wrestling show, the dude that does the wrestling show, he had to do his wrestling show on Facebook to have a chat room because the chat room wasn't working for him, all right? And neither was the call-in line. So he had to do his show on Facebook to have a show today. And his show is like a two-hour show. That's neither here nor there. Whereas I can call into your thing. I can call into Ron Rex thing. I can call into what's the other guy's name? Von Weehunt thing. And I get welcome to Block Talk Radio. Your show will begin in X, in an hour or in a couple days or whatever it is. You know, it gives you that message, right? So it's not the fact that it's not working for everybody. It's working for some people. Some things are working for some people. Some things aren't working for some people, and that's the way it is. And right now, I guess with Blog Talk Radio what they told the guy who does the wrestling service, he called him up, and what they told him is he's probably going to have to change his phone number to get it corrected.
Phone number. I don't know, like, who knows how long what kind of a battle that would be on Blog Talk to change your number. But I heard you say, so there are still some people today that the guest lines aren't working?
Yes, his show, I can't call. Of course, I can't call in the Roberts thing because it says, you can't be connected. I can't call in his show, this guy's wrestling show, can't be connected, that's what they tell you. You can't be connected. That's when you call into call-in line, you can't be connected. It's not anything more than that. You can't be connected. That's what they tell you. And I don't know what's going on with those people now. Like I said, with you, with Von Weehunt, with Ron Reck, it gives you the message. It gives you, welcome to Block Talk Radio, whatever. This show is going to start in X amount of 90 minutes, let's say, or in an hour and a half, or whatever it is, That's what it does. So like I said,
hit or miss then, basically. It's just hit or miss.
Yep.
But at least I'm lucky enough that the guest line is working. That's the most important part, I think, of doing the show. The chat room, it's nice. I like having the chat room because a lot of people come there that, to comment as we talk and, not be on the phone,
To your point about Soros, all this thing about him buying the stuff, it started out with him buying a number of Spanish-speaking radio stations out there, like in Florida and California and stuff like that, particularly in Florida, because those Spanish-talking radio stations, Spanish-speaking stations, are mostly, guess what, conservative.
That doesn't surprise me either. Just wait. So I wonder what happens after this. So if he becomes the biggest stakeholder in this stuff, then is he going to be pushing for more censorship.
We can't have these conservatives on the radio talking misinformation and disinformation, you know. That'll be the excuse. Pushing election fraud.
They've been doing this for decades now, but they couldn't get it done because Rush was still in the air, right? You know, Rush Limbaugh was still in the air, and he was the biggest thing out there. And if they tried to do it then, you know, then people would know, and people would be all up in arms. What the fuck are you doing? You know, you know. So, and then. What happens? Rush dies, and he starts buying these Spanish-speaking radio stations, and now he's doing this, that, and the other. And what's the name of that other company? There's another company that's selling out. Cumulus Radio is selling out to another. It's not Soros, but it's a foreign company. All right, so. Yeah, there's all these big radio companies are selling out or being bought, you know, and it's all due to the fact that a lot of the information that's coming off of those radio stations is what? Conservative, and they don't, and the liberals don't like it.
Yeah, one way or another, they're going to find a way to cancel you.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Yep.
And create a bigger monopoly. You know, it's we got the monopoly on all of the TV stations, pretty much all being owned by what is it, like three or four or something big massive companies, and you know, they're all in cahoots together. So they've dominated and monopolized TV, and with the advent of podcasting, especially with COVID, I think, you know, a lot of people, including me, started podcasts, you know, so podcasting is the thing now. And so now they have to work their means into all of those and create a monopoly on platforms people use for their podcasts. And if you're a conservative, then boy, oh boy, do they really want to get their mitts on you and
yep.
Yep.
And that's the thing. Now, one other before I let everybody else kind of, I just want to speak on the NASA thing you talked about earlier. You're right. If you got people like Elon Musk and what's his name, JetBlue? Is it JetBlue? The other guy. That's trying to go into space and basically doing a better job than the federal government has been doing for years. You got to let them do it. You got to let these people do it. I mean, and here's the deal about Elon Musk. Elon Musk, when he bought Twitter, he bought a crime scene, all right? He bought a crime scene. That's what happened. And now he has them over a barrel. Because they hate that he's making Twitter, he's trying to make Twitter a free speech platform. They don't like free speech, right? And they hate that he's trying to make a free speech platform, but they can't do anything about it because he's got the ability. He's going to take, I think Elon Musk is going to be the one that's going to get us to the moon or back to the moon, if you believe we've been to the moon before, right? I believe it's going to be Elon Musk that's going to do it. So we'll see what happens with the government and Elon Musk and what everything else, right?
Well, exactly. You know, and I think that I'm always kind of wondering because there's always been kind of a push to for privatizing NASA, you know, and there's always been this debate about, you know, why should we be spending so much money on NASA and stuff? And it kind of makes me wonder if we allowed private companies to do this from the very beginning, how much more advanced would we be? You know, because as with everything else with government, NASA is no exception when it comes to, you know, wasteful spending and things. And in order to secure their budgets every year, there's no motivation for them to be efficient, you know, and speed up the development of things. So if it was left into private hands, private companies would be more motivated to find cost-effective yet efficient ways.
Finding facts for the United States is freedom of speech.
Because the technology would develop that much faster. All of it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I thought I heard Joe speak up.
No, that was me. That was me. I had a I started a video and the audio came up. I didn't get it muted in time. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, think about this, Laurie. If you're talking about these the space program, you know, I mean, I don't know how many companies, if they had anybody back in the 50s and 60s and 70s that were like Elon Musk, maybe they did, maybe they didn't, because remember, they had a bunch of different things that happened with the Gemini and Apollo programs that that were bad things that happened. Things blew up, you know, or better yet, what happened with Apollo 13, right? The malfunction, the quote malfunction on Apollo 13, right?
Well, so, and then the space shuttle blowing up is the worst thing that ever happened.
Right. So if they didn't have, I mean, at back then, if they didn't have private companies that were willing to step up like apparently SpaceX is, then they couldn't privatize it back then, because they figured, well, the government may or may not be doing better, but we don't want to have the expenditures that it's going to take. You got to be willing to do this stuff. You got to be willing to take a risk. And apparently, Elon Musk, and I'm blanking on the other guy's name. There was another guy. He owns airplanes and he owns a airline. Virgin. Yeah, Virgin. The guy who owns Virgin. Yeah, that guy. And it's a risk. This is a risk. But if these people are willing to take that risk to try and go into space and possibly get us to the moon, I'm all for that. You know.
Well, same here. You know, but of course, even if let's say, okay, we defund NASA, you know, and we're gonna leave it up to private companies to do this, then that would also entail even more government regulation. You know, so they would take all of the regulations that they impose on NASA and then apply it to private companies. You know what I mean? And so therefore increase the costs and everything else too. So of course, you know, one way or another, government is going to want to control it, even if NASA is defunded.
Well, right. But then again, here's the deal. Remember Trump came up with Space Force, right? And how's he going to get Space Force up there if NASA's, how are you going to get Space Force up and going up there without, if NASA's not there? It's going to have to be, you know, Virgin Air, Virgin Space, or whatever they call it, or SpaceX, right? It's going to have to be a private company to get something like the Space Force up there, the satellites and the missiles and whatever it is that it is that Space Force is, it's going to have to be a private company to get it up there. So
you can't put a private company in charge of a military branch. That's part of the military, that Space Force. You can't have a private company in charge of that.
Well, I understand that, but we're talking about this in terms of what happens when NASA gets defunded, if NASA gets defunded.
Most of NASA's launches nowadays are from private companies. You know, you got to remember that most everything that NASA did was built by private company. Boeing there's a whole handful of people out there that were developing rockets and fuel and stuff like that for NASA, you know. So, you know, it's all been privatized. In fact, pretty much your military supply system is privatized from private companies.
They got private companies that supply them with they get government contracts to make things. Private companies aren't in charge of it. You get a government contract to make it.
That's right.
And the same thing with particularly SpaceX is they already have the contract with the rockets and the fuel and all that stuff to be able to do multiple launches in a year, you know? So they've already got the
Come on back now.
From the government. Go ahead.
Oh, that was me again. Damn it. I ain't got my...
Hello, Santa. But yeah, and look,
just double checking on the switchboard to make sure that I'm not missing anybody here.
Is Gunslinger here with us?
He is, but he hasn't raised his hand yet, so he's here, but still kicking back in silence for now.
Yeah, I was going to ask him a question, but he's not with us right now, so, yeah, that'll have to wait. And we have fucking bird brain.
But, yeah, looking at this article, you know, this was in cooperation with NASA. Apparently NASA paid this company to develop this lander, paid $118 million to this company Intuitive Machines is the name of the company that built this lunar lander. So they paid them $118 million to develop it. And then apparently there are six, NASA has six payloads on board Odysseus. I guess that's the name of it, Odysseus, O-D-Y-S-S-U-E-S, or E-U-S. However you pronounce it, including a set of cameras to study how rocket exhaust interacts with the lunar surface. NASA wants to use CLPS flights to test technologies for its own missions to the moon, including plans to send astronauts to the lunar south pole as soon as 2026. A second Intuitive Machines moon mission is slated to carry an ice drill to the South Polar region, perhaps by the end of the year, according to this article. So that's some interesting. So they're working in cooperation. So, of course, NASA has, I'm sure, you know, plenty of regulations and stipulations and everything, even though a private company did it. NASA's still running the show. And Gunslinger is raising his hand now. So, Gunslinger, I'm going to go ahead and bring you on. probably because he heard himself being called out. Hello?
Of course I did. The gunslinger's in the house now.
Hey.
Now, my thing is, he went to a place where they had a rocket, right? A gunslinger that had one of these rockets that powers like the space shuttle or one of these things, and you saw how large this thing was and all this stuff, right?
Oh yeah, I was right there when they tested it down there in Houston at the Houston Testing Center down there. We just happened to we was on the way to Florida down there to see my relatives. And we just happened to stop in there, and all of a sudden over the loudspeakers say, "Hey, everybody get out to the bus. They're going to fix the test a space shuttle engine." Wow. Boy, you talk about perfect timing. So we all, get on this bus, a couple of buses. There's about 40, 50 people, I guess. And we went way the fuck out there in the field. And this thing is like 12-story tall. Okay. Holy Toledo. You talking about when that thing fired up, you couldn't stand up, and we was a good 500, 800 yards away from this thing. Okay, they have to test them at full power. And these things are bolted 100 feet into the ground so the thing doesn't take off. Imagine that. So, pretty expensive. Pretty amazing, too, to see something like that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Good.
Right. Let's see.
We got Pianki in the house. I'm going to go ahead and bring on Pianki. Pianki!
Is this a new show or this continuation from last night when I fell asleep?
Continuation.
Oh, okay.
No, it's not really a continuation. I think we've changed subject matter now to NASA and spaceflight and stuff like that. So, unlike last night's conversation.
I think Patrick's still sleeping.
Hey, yeah, but, you talk about spaceflight. That's why can I promote letting young kids experiment in their innovative mind, because the methods that we use to lift stuff today, you can't use that continuously. That's just, we're going to have to get off into the Star Trek anti-gravity propulsion and all that kind of stuff, those things. If not, the rest of the world is going to surpass the United States. You see that they're trying to come along. Hell, Russia is starting to develop a robot army where they don't have to expend life.
Mm-hmm.
And no telling what China's doing. So we got to spend money with our kids, man, in education.
Right. At some point, there are many things that Star Trek came up with that ended up being, real, except for the fact that, at the time it came off tricorder, that thing with the medical people and all that stuff, yeah. But the thing that, and basically going at the speed of light has been proven to be able to be done, but hasn't been done yet, right? So at some point, Somebody's going to develop some sort of an engine and some sort of a propulsion for you to be able to go at the speed of light, okay? And you get to going at the speed of light, then you're going from here to the end of the galaxy within minutes, right?
Well, yeah, if people can conceive it, the possibility is there. The thing is today is that we have, just look at COVID. many of the things that was had to do with viruses and that. Heck, I remember when I was a kid coming up to school, we had biology that taught you all these things. Hell, we knew about viruses. Viruses all over the place. They fall from outer space. And the things that the warnings and all the hoopla that we was put under with this COVID pandemic was basically a bunch of hogwash. Now, people did get killed, but people did die from it. But a lot of it is something that you should have learned about and how to protect yourself. And, hey, your body is the best vaccine. Your own immune system, you can't get no better vaccine maker than that.
Nope. The dogs are barking.
Yeah, yep. Somebody's puppies aren't happy.
Never turn them. Eat somebody outside.
Terminator.
Go for it, dog.
Terminator flu.
Whatever.
But any other Skype numbers? Because I'm waiting for SARS to show up.
Let me see. Yeah, we do have a Skype number raising their hand. So let's find out if we have Sarge or somebody else. Hello, hello, Skype number, you are on. Who do we got?
Well, I guess you're the winner. You won the grand prize.
That's the opposite of Sarge.
That's the That's
That would be correct.
Hey, Nas, how you going? How's it going?
Yeah, I'm all right, man. So, no, but I
what are you up to today?
Not much. Despite Lorianne monitoring me through her, her being a part of the swamp government and everything. I know you're watching me, Lorianne. But no, I got something for y'all because y'all were talking about NASA and private companies and all of that. Well, the issue becomes private companies and liabilities. Pianchi could probably speak to this. When you speak about liabilities for a regular company, like a construction company or something like that, just worker compensation or somebody getting hurt, you know, that's a tremendous risk. But when you talk about stuff like NASA, space, and things like that, you're talking about, you know, hundreds of billions, almost trillion, and no private company is going to be able to be liable for that stuff. So that's why most of this stuff is publicly funded, and then later on, they create little partnership deals. The phone you got in your hand right now, the GPS for that, that's the Navy, publicly funded. Navy did the research, gave the technology away to the companies, then the companies sell it back to us. The video screen that works on your phone, that's the Air Force. The chips in your phone for, you know, the microphones and video playback and all of that.
That's China.
Therefore, so, no. This is America. This was all American ingenuity. This is all publicly funded research that was later turned over to the private industry, and then the private industry can come out and make a buck on it, but they don't have to take as much risk because they didn't spend the money on the R&D. Now, Americans can say, hey, we should have a share in that since they're spending our money on it. I think there's a good argument for that, but overall, though, when you talk about, you know, these big event things, these big ideas, like Pianchi was talking about Star Trek or whatever, those things are going to be publicly funded. They're not going to be funded by the private industry because it's just you lose your shirt trying to do that stuff, man, and that's why they don't do it. Go look up how much Elon has gotten in government subsidies, grants, and loans in order to do some of the stuff he's done. He didn't do that with private money. Because nobody would risk money like that.
Well, a lot of the money, it was a lot of private money. And when you talk about insurance, they have what's called OIC, which is Owner Control Insurance Programs. That goes on in some construction projects, like the stadium we've done there in St. Louis. The owners control the insurance. It was cheaper for them to do that way. But technically...
Yeah.
But realistic, it's best for things to be done private because you have so much latitude. Yeah, I'm for private businesses, private American business. You have to put them under the constraints, though, that they can't go selling information off to your adversaries.
Yeah, well, see, that's another problem you run into, because at a certain point they have to move by the profit motive. And if you create the next, you know, like you were talking about a robotic army, if you create the next drone fleet to where you don't lose a man or a woman in warfare, you have to sell that globally if you're a country. You can't sell that strategically to who you want to. So that's another, you know, problem of it. But, again, look up everything I just told you about the chips, the phones, the whole – remember we used to worry about magnetic pulse and all that? The Air Force solved that. That protection is actually in your phone, and that's from the Air Force. And, again, this is all public money. So all the big projects, that's how they've been done. So, you know, the private industry can say whatever they want to say, but when it comes down to it, Uncle Sugar's the one producing the stuff.
Well, think about this, Raj, think about this. Where did the whole thing about rocket technology came from? It came from, mostly came from Germany in World War II, right? And
how did Germany research?
Mm-hmm. Government paid for it.
Yep. See what I mean?
No. All that was invented by a black man.
When I
with
was
all those
in,
rockets.
Back in like 1969, I think it was.
All the
technology. That I worked
That's
with.
What Chewbacca said.
A farmer that I
Why
was
Why you lying
with,
on
that, son, his son, Ronnie, was working on computer wafers in their garage. And the chemicals that they was working with were burning the hell out of them. So that goes back. A lot of things start off in people's garages. Hey, but look, Naj, I've got a spot for you with being one of the astronauts to go to the moon. And if something happened, you would be the first black man lost in space. It'll be another black first.
Well, you already lost here, so what difference do it make? You lost in America, so what difference do it make? But why the hell are we going back to the moon? I remember Elon Musk sat in front of that video screen and told us 10 years from now he'll put a man on Mars. Well, that was 12 years ago.
That's right. You're right about that.
Think about this. The Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 are still out there. So is that
you haven't heard the latest? You haven't heard the latest on Voyager 2, have you? They've lost contact with it. They've lost contact with it. It looks like it's gone.
Well, it's still, the thing is, it's still out there someplace.
Magic,
yeah, it's still
just
out there.
Out there.
Yeah, they've lost communications with it.
Wouldn't that be something that came from the hey, gunslinger? Wouldn't that be something that came from the opposite side of the?
that worked.
So did they? Because they lost contact with it, but then they said that they resumed full contact. So I'm trying to see. July 21st is when they lost contact, and then it was in August 3rd or August 4th that NASA said they restored contact with Voyager 2, but I'm not seeing that they have lost contact with it again.
I think they said they lost it again from just about 2 weeks ago. I read it somewhere, one of the articles there. Go Google it, I guess. But they said they lost it and they couldn't, the program upgrade wouldn't do
it. Voyager 1.
Voyager 1
this time. Okay, so Voyager 1, a computer glitch has put the future of humanity's furthest flung space probe in doubt. So this is from February 8th, a Wired article. Voyager 1 is still alive out there, but a computer problem has kept the mission's loyal support team in Southern California from knowing how much more about the status of NASA's longest-lived spacecraft. The computer glitch cropped up on November 14th and affected Voyager 1's ability to send back telemetric data, such as measurements from the craft science instruments or basic engineering information about how the probe was doing. As a result, the team has no insight into key parameters regarding the craft's propulsion, power, or control systems. So they said that was November 14th. When did... So, yeah.
Yeah, we have limitations. So there's limitations on how far we can go and what we can do. So, yeah, things like that are going to happen. But eventually, when it's machine learning and machines doing all that kind of stuff, who knows how far we can send something out there. But, yeah,
even,
the vastness of space, it is what it is.
Even the little helicopter that they sent up there on Mars, supposedly, whatever they named it, it's dead. They landed, and that's it. It's out.
And they don't even know what's at the bottom of the ocean yet. We're talking about outer space. I mean, they still don't even know what the hell's at the bottom of the ocean in some places, you know?
Well, you should send Bianchi down there in a tube with a joystick like those guys last year. Go down there, Bianchi, deep sea diver.
Oh, they just exploded. They exploded, they said, in like a matter of like a split second. Boom, they just exploded. Imagine that. That'd be quick, Deb. Imagine dying like that. Oh,
man. Well, the same thing would happen to you. Same thing would happen to you in outer space too. Your heart would blow your body up like a balloon.
Yeah, blow up. Those people in that little submarine, they didn't even see it coming. They didn't even see it coming.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
it was like a
so
flash. Yeah.
Yeah, it was just a
crazy
thousands of seconds, and boom. Oh.
Imagine
well,
that.
Man.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah,
it's
one
like
time
imagine. Imagine you're getting
nothing
in something like that, and you see the guy controlling it with an Xbox controller. So that should have told you right then to get out.
Yeah, right there. I would have got out right there. Yep, like that. Yeah, just sitting there on your phone recording out the window, and poof, you're gone.
Oh, man.
That crazy.
I wonder what happened to their soul, the spirit. What happened to that? I always wanted to ask that. Every time you ask a pastor that, what happens to their soul and spirit? Where did that go?
Well, hopefully it didn't drown in all that water.
Well, if you send me 1995, I'll tell you.
Now, this does, you know, this sounds kind of morbid, but I read somewhere a few years back that they've studied people that are checking out, dying, I hate to use that word, checking out, and they've actually weighed the body before, during, and after. And they said that the weight decreases by, I don't know, whatever, hundredths of an ounce or whatever. So, be the judge. I don't know.
That's interesting.
That's interesting. I mean, so something leaves the body when you check out. And they proved
it
by the weight.
Man, when my dad died, that room got ice cold, man, and something pulled at my waist. I'm not lying. Something yanked at my waist, and I don't know what it was. So, you know, and I don't know what I saw behind me on video. I got it on video, something creeping up behind me in my room here.
Well,
people experience
you evacuate yourself. That's where the lost weight goes.
Maybe so.
Well,
but people have reported having these out-of-body experiences and all this stuff. Is it a mass hallucination, or is there something to it? Is everybody crazy and they see something? That, you know, I mean, they've actually had people that said, I've, you know, seen hovering above the body, and doctors are working on me and all that, and a little thin cord still attaches to their eye. I don't know.
When they say they've seen heaven above, were they at the North Pole or the South Pole?
It was bigger than that. I think it was out of jail. I've studied this for a few years. It's very, very intriguing that every one of them, 100%, have seen a bright light that is brighter than the sun, but it doesn't hurt your eyes. And it's white, a pure white light. Now let's think about it for a minute. What is pure energy? Electricity.
Yeah.
Its pure form is white. Look at lightning in its pure form. It's white. So is there a correlation? And there's electricity.
So you know, laying on that, when you're on that operating table, they do have a big white light above you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but they claim that they
need a lot
of
electricity in the body. Yeah. But, okay, but how much of that is culture, though? If you're a Buddhist and you're about to die, do you see the cow you're going to be reincarnated as? Like, how much of this is, if you're from a certain culture, you see whatever your cultural little background.
Well, they study that. They all see it, even from the other cultures. They see the same thing, bright light.
Well, there was an episode on Star Trek. I think it was Voyager one time. And that short little fucker, that ugly, looks like he got pimples all over his face. I can't even think of the name of the character. But he was supposedly have died in a transporter accident or something like that, okay? You can go look it up on Google or even YouTube. And he was always believed that, well, once, you know, that time comes that you're surrounded by your family and your everything, blah, blah, blah. He said, I didn't see nothing. There was nothing there. So was I lied to? Yeah. I mean, it was, I'm going, whoa. That kind of makes you think a little bit.
Yeah. Hear that or he's on the way to hell. You know?
Yeah, one of the two. One of the two. But he said all of his life he was, you know, with everybody, you know, that has went on before, that they'll be reunited and all this blah, blah, blah. And he said, I didn't see it.
Mm.
Wasn't there. It was intriguing, oh. At least. So I don't know. Be the judge on that one. Yeah.
Well, one thing for certain, we're all going to find out.
Yeah, one day we'll find out. Yep.
There's no denying
it. Yeah, exactly. The question is if we're brought back, if we'll remember any of it. And that's like the good question there. It's like, why do some people that, you know, die and then they're brought back, and why do some of them have these very vivid, you know, recollections of, you know, of what they were like while they were dead, and why other people absolutely have none at all? You know, what does that mean? Why does this happen for some people and not others? I mean, and there's some really crazy stories out there, you know, people have reported, and being able to, you know, literally, like, you know, to gain legitimacy because, you know, they're literally, they flatlined, you know, they describe, you know, very specific things that doctors or nurses or family members or whatever that were around at the time said and did.
Yep.
Stuff that there's no possible way that they could know. And, you know, and then when they're revived and they gain consciousness, they talk about it. And so it's like, wow, you know, and then on the flip side, you know, there's other people that come back and they're like, I didn't see jack shit. You know, I was there one minute and then I woke up the next. Nothing in between.
What about people that have had blood transfusions and organ transfusions, okay? They wake up and all of a sudden, hey, I love watermelon, but I hated it. They get these weird feelings. They got these things that they didn't normally do before their organ transplant or whatever. Now they have something completely different. Now, where did it come from? They claim this is the claim. Yeah,
the person
whose
organ you took on. And you know when you die.
Yeah. They claim that
you all don't die at one time. Your ears continue to work for some time after the rest of your body is dead.
They claim now, I don't know how true it is because I'm not a doctor. God knows I should have been. I've been a filthy rich millionaire. But anyway, they claim that the memory is in the blood now. Okay? The memory is in the blood. Okay? Because look at your brain. I mean, my God, your entire life history is contained in a bunch of spongy tissue. Okay, I mean, okay.
Think of it like a computer hard drive.
Yeah, I mean.
Think of it like a hard drive.
But you can't even remember. Do you remember what you did when you was 5 years old on this date at 10:15 p.m., blah, 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 in 27 seconds? No.
You don't. You just lack the ability to recall it. That's what that concern
right,
is.
Right.
That's why you write a journal.
It's there.
Well,
but
the thing is,
it's not as important.
It's been proven that the brain is nothing more than a big electrical thing, and memories are nothing but electrical impulses. Right, Gunslinger?
Yeah. That's what it is. That's the brain is a generator. It is a DC generator. It's a minute electrical impulses. What do you think makes your heart beat? If your heart is being shocked, and every beat from your brain is sending an electrical signal down there to that muscle, that heart muscle, and saying, shock, 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 shock. How do you think you move your finger? Your brain sends an electrical impulse, and it shocks that finger muscle. Move, move, move.
There's a science fiction movie about that, though, Gunslinger, about where you would, what's it called? It was basically the remake of Total Recall. And in the remake, people would go to these places, and they would create new memories for you, fake memories, but you would access them as if they were real, so you would treat that as a life experience. Now, how scary does some of this stuff sound as far as, you know, going into some of that, you know, that technology they're talking about where you put on, you've seen the new Apple thing, right? Where you put on the little Apple helmet thing.
Yeah.
Virtual reality and all that. Yeah. Sounds kind of scary.
It is.
Now, all your immune history of you and your aunt is stored in your bone marrow. So when your body is exposed to something that it hasn't recently understood, it sends them cells to your bone marrow to a big-ass archive library to find out what the hell do we need to do to fight this off. In the meantime, your white corpuscles will put up a wall to stop the infection. It's like if you ever get an infection on your finger, like biting that cuticle, and it starts bleeding, well, the bacteria out of your mouth will put up an infection, and it starts spreading. Well, your white corpuscles will put up a wall and start fighting it off and holding it at bay while your cells go find out what do we need to kill this son of a bitch. I mean, that's just the way it works. When the doctor goes to the hospital, the doctor stick a needle in that swelling and a bunch of white stinky stuff come out. Well, that's the dead invader. You know, anything that dies is going to start rotting and it's going to stink.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. When, you know, and then what happens when you take a thing like the clot shot, and it changes your RNA. It changes the stuff within your bones that help keep you healthy, right?
Your body adds it to the library. I mean, that's the reason COVID was a problem. When we talk about them trying to weaponize certain viruses and everything else, and they create a version that hasn't been introduced to the human body, your body doesn't have the blueprints to deal with that one. So you got to give it some help to deal with those blueprints. I mean, that's all it is. It's just a simple reset. And I understand you guys are worried about it. You're scared of it. But for the most part, man, everything's been fine. And we lost, a million people, man.
Look,
I got a Skype caller raising their hand, so I want to find out who it is that we got. Another Skype number two, who do we got?
Hello,
you're on. You're unmuted, Skype number. Speak up when you want.
Okay, yeah, I got it. Hey, Laurie, it's you who? It's me, whoever you want me to be. How you doing, Laurie?
Sarge.
Yes. And I'd like to go back to what Naj said a little bit earlier, and I'm going to have to confirm what he said, and this is how I know. In a long time ago in a faraway place, our battalion headquarters doubted the veracity of our body count. Had firefights with the enemy,
and they insisted upon us collecting all the dead North Vietnamese we killed, put them in cargo nets, and the Chinooks would take them up, bring them back to headquarters. They could count them to make sure the count was accurate. They actually made us do that. So we had to pick these bodies up and put them in a cargo net. And it was quite common right after death, especially if fecal matter is near the sphincter, for it to be evacuated because the sphincter muscle is relaxing. If it's near, if fecal matter is near the end of the digestive tract, out it comes. And I've seen the same thing with crime scenes, homicide scenes, everything else. We watched Chicago cops negotiating with your union not that they would not handle bodies anymore. And they, you know, they had the Cook County medical examiner's office had to handle dead bodies constantly because they used to make cops take the bodies away once the crime scene had been processed. So it's true. It's true. The body does get lighter for that reason. Now, I'm not saying that's the case in every case, but even if you don't, fecal matter has come out, frequently the gases in the intestinal tract comes out, and they're heavier than air, so there you go. But anyway, enough of that. But, yeah, all these things that, you know, we're talking about, you know, memories and all that, they definitely seem to be electrical impulses. It doesn't make sense to me to think that your memory would be storehoused in blood platelets and blood, you know, blood. It makes seems to think they just go because the electrical generator that is your brain is not functioning anymore. That's where they're all stored. I guess they go with your soul. Because that would seem to make more sense if there's an afterlife.
You know,
electricity being energy.
Oh, go ahead.
You know, electricity being energy, you know.
People with diabetes complain about seeing those flashes off to the side of their eyes. And that's just your cell. Your cells remember, and you know, if you go out and eat a chicken, well, your body's going to take on some aspects of the experience that chicken had. You know, when we were kids, we used to love to pop the bone of a chicken and eat the marrow out of it. I mean, none of my friends go around clucking like a chicken, but all that stuff does have effect on the body. So people with some of the strongest immune system is on the African continent. They've been around longer. The kids exposed to everything. I've seen kids drink water out of a trough. They drink water out of a trough that right next to them, a cow slurping in it.
Yeah. That's why it's good to have you. Assuming you don't have a child that's got some sort of really weakness to a particular pathogen, it's really best to let your kids get out and play in the dirt so they can pick up immunity. You know, assuming they're healthy otherwise, to pick up your immune system needs to get exercised, really. And I think they've shown that for normal, healthy children, it's probably best to be exposed to some kind of pathogen. Let them play in the dirt and just keep an eye on them.
Exactly. I mean, I used to take mud baths on the farm, And I ran around barefoot all the time and, you know, including stepping in cow pies and stuff like that. You know, when I was out playing on my grandpa's farm, and I came back, you know, for dinner, it's like, you better get your ass into the bathtub, man. You stink. And
we were made from dirt, the dust. God created Adam from.
But the most important part is to introduce your body to all that stuff so it can fight it, so it has a reference point. Oh, we handled this when he was 9. Oh, we handled this when he was 15. You know, your body has a reference point for it. So you got to build that line.
Yeah, that's called memory T cells. MRNA, going back to the mRNA clot shot, the reason why you have to continually get boosters is because, like you said, that it's giving your body a blueprint. No, it's not. It's like having a blueprint, tearing off just one section of it, body to be able to recognize the entire blueprint off of just one section of it. Because that's effectively what they're doing. It's creating only one spike protein. And viruses have multiple spike proteins on them. So to gear a so-called vaccine on just one spike protein and expect your body to remember it, it's not going to. You're not giving it the full blueprint to work off of. And so this is literally like there is scientific data that shows that the mRNA shots are not producing long-term memory and long-term T memory cells. They're just not. That's why the boosters keep getting needed more and more. That's why when there's variants, you don't even have the full basic blueprint of the original for your body to go off of to recognize, like, oh, you know, this looks pretty similar to this virus that I got a couple years ago. Your body can't even do that. So
yeah,
that's why these things aren't working. That's the falsehood of these mRNA vaccines.
The science community disagrees with you. There are some who say what you say, but the majority say the
actually,
opposite.
No, actually, there's a big body of evidence that I'm talking about.
If you
look up Dave Champion, he researched the hell out of it and references article after article, study after study,
all this stuff, Lorianne.
Anything that defies the narrative, defies how they want you to think it works, gets suppressed, and anything that contradicts that gets censored, and that's therefore people don't believe it.
Well, real quick, there's a huge bank of data that says otherwise. You say your side. Basically, we're doing the Kobe LeBron thing. I mean Jordan LeBron thing right now. I say LeBron, you say Jordan. I say LeBron. It doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. We'll all know in 50 years. So it is what it is.
There's scientific data coming out that the COVID shots are creating vaccine dependency. Exactly, for that same reason. Why? Because it's not creating memory T cells.
Yeah, because you have...
Here's what it is, folks. The body is a magnificent organism machine. The more we learn about it and how it supposedly they think it functions, the more we fuck it up.
Well, the true thing that you said there is that we learn. See, one of the handicap is that you got the brain trying to study another brain that they don't know. You know, when populations used to travel around the world, and one group come upon another group, and then the one group or the other gets sick, that's because they were sharing diseases. And part of the population would die off, but some of the population would survive, and they would have a stronger immune system than what they did before. That's the process of natural selection. I mean, it's just the way it is. If not, hell, humankind would have disappeared a long time ago.
Well, it's why they tell you on planes you can't bring a certain insect, a certain whatever. Like, disrupting ecosystems leads to carnage. So, of course, you wouldn't plan to do it that way, and you know, it shouldn't be that way. You should plan things out in a way that you kind of get the safety protocols in beforehand, but that's just the way it's always been. But the thing I was going to ask y'all about was, have y'all looked into CRISPR? CRISPER, CRISPR.
You can get your own kit to genetically modify yourself. You know, if you want to glow fluorescent green, then you can take genes from fluorescent algae. Yeah.
Right.
You can do it.
They're trying to manipulate DNA. So now how? I don't know how bad that's going to get before we even get to any good properties of it, but just think about that dropped into today's marketplace.
We're not going to get to any good part of it. All it's going to do is fuck up the human race. Period.
Period. Yep.
Long time ago, I heard, you know what hemophilia is? You know, when you bleed, you can't, your blood won't clot and stuff like that, and you bleed to death type of shit? Well, yeah. There is one way. The only way that they can really think about curing hemophilia, getting rid of hemophilia, is basically by not letting hemophilias, people who have hemophilia, breed and have children, because it's passed down through the genes and stuff. The way to stop hemophilia, those that have it, you know, should be sterilized.
Mm-hmm.
Refrain from having children.
In today's way, they would go into the DNA and remove the thing that causes it, and then treat that as a, you know, medical advancement or whatever. And those things, we're not too far away from that being a possibility for most.
We've got three African American gentlemen with us, right? And I'm talking about, and I'm not mentioning sickle cell anemia, right? Which is basically that what we're talking about is if you have a carrier and a non-carrier and they get together, probably nothing's going to happen. But if you got two carriers that get together, sickle cell anemia, then that kid is likely, the next generation is likely going to have it.
Yeah, right? Absolutely right. Before you could marry, they used to have you to take a test to find that out. But, you know, people that's coming out of those tropical zones, their red blood cells are sickled. That prevents the malaria parasites from latching on to it. Well, what happens when you bring persons that grew up and evolved on the tropical zones like the equator to North America? Well, that which was protected to them when they was in their origin, now they in a different environment, it becomes a hindrance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you get the typical sickle cell anemia.
Yeah.
Yep, that's the thing. And as far as we were talking about different vaccines, you know, I mean, it took them 50 fucking plus years to get the polio vaccine correct, right? And everybody's taking it, whatever, at one point or another, whatever. But they got that thing correct.
Of science was really slow then. The speed of science is much faster now. And I had something that's not the human body, but think about it. When we always hear about GMOs, we always think GMO bad immediately. Well, before scientists got involved, GMOs were just regular farmer practice. When a farmer wanted a certain type of fruit or a certain type of vegetable, they would crossbreed different things.
But that isn't GMO. That's genetic selection. Genetic selection and genetic modification are two very, very different things.
Lorianne, just hold on, and I'm going to send you to Dr. Kara Santa Maria. She has her podcast out there. You can argue with her about that. If you think she's erroneous, I don't. But what she gets into when she talks about this stuff is not only have we been doing this stuff for thousands and thousands of years, but that some of this stuff is going to be beneficial. When you had the, you know, the problems with the Dust Bowl and everything else, and you had to figure out a way, okay, how can we produce these crops to where the boll weevil won't attack them? And they had to figure that out back then, too. So it's not just as simple as just saying all GMOs bad. Now, when you get Monsanto involved, hell yeah, it's going to be bad. Hell yeah, you got bad outcomes when you're talking about them producing stuff that doesn't leave seed. Or when it comes to your area, it takes over what the former crop was to only Monsanto crop. Yeah, all of that is bad. We get that. But there are some properties of GMOs and modifying things that are beneficial and have been for a long time. That's all I was saying.
Well, you know, here's the thing on that. Plants do naturally develop its own defense. And I've seen this with my eyes looking at a coconut grove. Coconut grove about 2 football fields long. And at one end, the coconut trees was dropping leaves and dying. and it was spreading toward the other end, and you go down, you go, and all of a sudden it stops. That's because the coconut trees sent a message down line, say, hey, we got problems. And by the time the disease works its way someplace down the line, it can't go no further because the trees have developed an immunity to the disease. That stuff is for real, man. It is for real.
Yeah, I mean, hell, the smallpox vaccine over here, it was brought over here. Well, it was taught over here by a guy who was enslaved. I want to say his name was Seneca. When they had the smallpox outbreak over there in the Northeast, I know Sarge probably knows this a little better than me, but he was the one who told the guy who had him enslaved how to treat it. He would cut himself on the arm and put the little bit of the blood in another person. And that's how they inoculated themselves so the people who were enslaved weren't getting sick and everybody else was dying because of smallpox. And eventually the guy asked them, you know, what the hell are y'all doing? Why are y'all doing that? And then he studies it for a while and then, you know, puts it out there, and that saved, you know, who knows how many lives.
Well, you've seen that with the Indians. Didn't the Indian take a knife and cut his hand? The white man take a knife and cut his hand? Then they grasp each other? Same principle.
Mhm.
Yeah.
Blood kin or whatever they call that.
One of the reasons why come blacks that came, Africans that came to this part of the world, when they start interbreeding. When you interbreed, you share. What one don't have, the other one do, you share it, and it makes one stronger, and the other one has a possibility to be stronger too. I mean, that's the way human beings do.
There's a clip from the great George Carlin talking about vaccines, and I think we played it on your show at one point or another, Laurianne.
His skit about germs. Yeah, we've played it before for sure.
Is that where he's talking about they had to swim in the Hudson River when they were kids and they got hit with everything because of the way that they lived?
That's true.
Carlin was a G.
He was basing it on polio. Oh, polio was going around. We tempered ourselves in shit, he said. That's what he said, by swimming in the Hudson River and shit and stuff like that. And that's the thing. That goes back to what Laurianne was talking about when she was going through the fields, walking barefoot through manure, right? Right, Laurianne?
Yeah, cow pies.
Yep.
There's a cow pie. Oh, well. No big deal.
If you took a suburban kid with helicopter parents who lived a real sanitized life and dropped them off with Laurianne and them when they were kids, and he ran around with them for a day, that kid would be doing this chick to death. Because his body would have been prepared for it. He couldn't handle it.
You know, I've been to Egypt, and one of the things they tell people on the tour group, don't drink the milk or stay away from the dairy products because they don't pasteurize. And people that don't, they get diarrhea. Another thing, just traveling through the cities of Cairo where they have ox, horses, donkeys, and they be dropping patties. The patties dry up, and it turns to dust, and then you breathe in that dust. Someone coming from the United States breathe that dust. They ain't got to eat a thing. They will get diarrhea. It's because your body is not used to that stuff. Hell, them kids be swimming in the Nile River down there around Aswan, also down around Cairo. But look how far that river has traveled. The water has traveled by the time it gets. It's been through probably 100 countries where cows don't shit in it. Human beings have pissed in it. Well, they picking up all sorts of beneficial things that they normally wouldn't if this way wasn't around that river. So nature has a way of, you know, the first teacher of human beings were nature. Human beings didn't know Jack. They watched the birds, they watched the fish, they watched the animals, and they developed some of the habits from carrying your babies on to getting your babies out the house. So That's the way things work.
Right. And that's how you
I'm going to bring Nathan on here real quick, too. He's raising his hand. And there is about 13 and a half minutes left of the live broadcast to call in. So if you are out there listening and you haven't called in, do so within the next 13 and a half minutes or so you can continue on with us while we go into overtime. 563-999-3698. And bringing Nathan on in. Hey, hey there,
hello.
Nathan.
Hey.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the conversation, guys.
Yeah, no, I was thinking of when you guys were talking, I was thinking my dad had a guy work for him when I was a kid up in North Carolina growing up, and this guy had been bitten by a snake, a rattlesnake, and any time the hospital got somebody, they had a list of people who had been bitten, and whenever they had a guy come in, they would call these volunteers to come in and give blood and transfer it to them. And it was all about this immunity thing, and they tend to recover from it.
Right. Now, there's some European kings back in the day you can read about who would, I think Louis XIII was the one famous for it, inject small port microdosing poison, basically, because he was so worried about being poisoned, he would try to poison himself incrementally, bit by bit, so that if he ever got hit with it in a way that could kill him, he could survive it. So, yeah man.
And you know something else, too. My sister was growing up, when we were kids growing up, she liked playing inside. We all were dark, had tans, and she was white. And she was what they call anemic. And she had, the doctor was on medicine, and the doctor kept telling my mom, she needs to get outside and play in the dirt, you know. Because that's where you're going to get your immune system. And she eventually, as a teenager, got through it. But we came from dirt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that in because you ain't got a chat room. Before you mute me, I got a joke for you.
Alrighty.
You know how to make a tissue dance? Put a boogie in it.
What?
Oh God. Where do you get these from?
You gotta get your chat room
from,
up.
The gun wrappers. You know those I forget the kind of gum it was, but every piece had like a little joke in it.
If you would mute me, I'm gonna keep listening.
But Juka Joe, yeah, that you're right. That's what it was.
Thank you.
Oh, that's funny. Are you able to mute yourself on your end, Nathan, or do you want me to?
I'm just gonna hang up and keep listening by the computer. So I don't know.
Oh,
I'm
okay.
A low tech right now. I haven't figured that out yet.
Yeah, but you won't be able to call back in though.
Yeah, that's okay.
We've got 10
I'll just
minutes
hang
of the
up
live
for
left.
Now and listen. If
you're good.
I'm gonna call
yeah.
away in. I'll
hey,
call back
Nathan,
in.
Nathan.
Yeah.
Stay called in because in just a few minutes, the computer side of this show is going to go away.
Yeah,
yeah
I don't have much
you
to
on
offer,
my
though.
End, and then you can just hit one again if you want to talk again or something,
yeah.
too.
Okay, okay. Just cut me off then, and I'll just sit and listen by phone.
Okay, yeah, and so if you hit one a second time, then that'll raise your hand again. So, yeah, I'll just
okay.
mute you. And then before the switchboard goes down, then I'll unmute everybody, like I usually try to remember to do, but sometimes fail. But we got another hour or so before that happens.
Yeah, you might as well stay on because we're going to run out of science stories pretty soon and we got to start talking about something else. But the other thing I was going to add was, the other part is go back to Dr. Carver again, George Washington Carver. When they had trouble because, you know, everybody was growing cotton and you were wearing out the soil and the soil was terrible, him and some other people are the ones who figured out crop rotation, how you get healthy soil again. And then you can go back to growing whatever you want to. But, he got them planting peanuts and sweet potatoes and stuff like that to put the nutrients back into the soil because they had worn it out because, it became a cash crop with cotton. and it just killed all the soldiers.
You know who he worked for back in them days? Henry Ford. Ford. Henry Ford paid him a lot of money to be on the payroll.
Mm-hmm.
Old George Washington Carver. He came out of Missouri. He was castrated.
Right. Yeah.
He was castrated. He was a slave, and his master castrated him because he didn't want him interbreeding with the, you know, the white women there. But people say that castration clicked off something in him where he had the ability to improve his ability to do what he ended up being able to do. Some people say he could talk to the plant. That ain't no far-fetched.
That's where all these gardeners got that idea of talking to the plants and their flowers.
Well, I tell you what, over there in Ghana, and I experienced this myself, is a plant that grows, and I think I told Laurie about this. If you take your hand and you go to get closer and closer, the plant would shy away from you. It ain't no shit. That plant would shy away from you. Don't want you to touch it. You can just watch it. You come closer, it move away from you. So, and like I just got through saying, those trees that was affected near with whatever it was that caused the leaves to drop, turn brown, and stuff like that, in that grove, a coconut grove is long. It may be 50 yards wide as a football field, but it could be 2 or 3 or 4 football fields long. And you could look down from where the leaves were dropping and turning brown, and everything was cool. That's because they communicate down the line, and I guess the trees knew what to do, and they developed some type of defense system to stop and halt the spread of that disease.
Mm-hmm. See, and you're talking about plants and trees communicating, and we're just now really discovering all this stuff now. But like you said, if you observe, you can see that stuff in nature. What the hell did Tesla have in his damn workroom where after he died, the U.S. government came in and took everything, and nobody knows what his research was unless you that connected inside the government to know. What the hell did Tesla have where he's talking about wireless energy way back then?
Magic.
Ain't no telling. Hell, I was in Togo one time, and the guys came up selling vegetables, and hell, the carrots was all white. Carrot is naturally white. It's not orange. That's a modified carrot. And sometimes they modify themselves. You talk about GMOs and orgasms. Plants would naturally do that depending on the environment that they're in. And I dispute this whole idea about because your body is only going to take the nutrients out of anything, no matter how contaminated it is, and that's what it uses. The rest of it is going to throw right out the chute hole.
Mm.
Yeah. What are we fixing here? What are we talking about here?
Yeah, we're
talking about how carrots is a corporation.
I mean.
Oh, okay. How about this one? I give you one. When all of us were on as children, how many apples did you have as far as your choice in the store? How many choice of apples did you have? 2, 3, maybe. Going Whole Foods,
yeah,
now, it's about 20.
Depending. Yeah, but you gotta also remember, you gotta remember this too, Naj. Back in those days, you know, when we were all growing up, transportation wasn't that good to get apples or fruits like that to you in a timely manner before they rotted, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean,
so
you know, there are apples.
Too. Like, if you're here in, like, Pacific Northwest where, you know, Washington and Oregon, Washington especially is known for their apples, but then you live someplace like in Minnesota where your growing season is shorter, then your options are limited. So you're going to be, if you do grow them, they're going to have to be, you know, hardy to your climate and everything. But you're right. You know, there are tons of varieties of apples. I mean, you know, there's
hundreds.
There's, I think,
yeah.
I read a while ago that there's a farmer that saved the seeds for, that literally saved the seeds of like something like 100 or 200 different varieties of apples because of, due to commercialization and people only, you know, wanting certain apples, you know, they want their Red Delicious or their Granny Smith and that's it. The overgrowing of those particular varieties were leading to the near extinction of all these others. And so, you know, this guy has been continuing to grow and collect seeds of all of these different varieties of apples. And, you know, be thankful for that, you know, because you never know when some of those, maybe one of those apples that is not desirable, maybe there's some big time like healing properties that might be discovered. And, you know, maybe there's some kind of, you know, medication that can be discovered from some of these varieties of apples. But if they had gone totally extinct, we'd never know. You know, so you never know what might arise from that.
Well, bananas that we have in the stores are not the original bananas. Bananas over in Africa are much smaller. Then they got another variety called a plantain. But guess this, tuberculosis. That jumped from porpoises to human beings. Porpoises coming off of the coast of South Africa. So species, disease from one species can jump over into human beings. Of course, unless you kiss Flicker.
Yeah. I thought you were going to talk about the bat.
Yeah, everybody knows that.
They blame in China with the wet market and everything else, yeah?
They kids play
which,
with the bat.
Which we all know is bullshit. All signs point to lab leak, but they wanted to try to blame it on a bat. Come on now.
The kids play with the bat. They,
pangolin.
Yeah. The kids over there in Togo play with the bats right there at their waterfall.
The U.S. Army picked it up. The U.S. Army picked up that virus in 2018, August of 2018, and delivered it here. I've got the CIA paperwork that says it. Me and this guy Mel from Florida found it.
Wing so it can't fly.
A guy named Mel from Florida was in the military. Me and him found it online back in 2019 or 2000, right before it came to the United States, the virus.
Well, oh, hold on, man.
Well, we don't need the bio lab to China anymore. We got them in Ukraine. That's why that's one of the reasons they're trying to save Ukraine.
Well, hold on. They got them all over. But let's be realistic about something. And now I'm gonna sound like a swamp monster, a deep state person. If genetic warfare is it's going to happen. Genetic warfare, germ warfare, all this stuff is just going to happen. Are you as a country going to invest in that? And the answer is America, China, Russia. The answer is yes.
So, you know when this started, though? It started back in World War One with things like mustard gas, you know?
You know who invented
mustard gas, don't you? Dude, those mustard gas stories are the scariest thing you will ever read about. They're in the trenches. They see the Germans come forward. They open up some canister. They see them turning this canister, and then they all turn and run and just book it. And then a couple minutes later, this gas just starts to float over their area, and all of a sudden you see guys, you know, a couple feet in front of you start choking and gasping and die. Like, dude, that's got to be one of the most terrifying stories we got in the book of human history, the introduction of gas warfare. Like,
what the hell's making noise?
I don't know. I'm just saying, that's some terrifying shit. Like, I don't know if anybody else want to say something about that, but, dude, that, to me, that's up there on the list of most terrifying shit we could ever – conceive of, like.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
the
but
way to go.
Knowing about
yes.
it is one thing.
Germ warfare has been around for centuries.
Hell, back in the Middle Ages, when they were fighting, when they were laying siege to these cities, they'd fling these dead bodies that have the diseases in the dead bodies over the wall into these cities that they were leaving, laying siege to, right?
Yeah.
So it's been around for a while.
Yeah, it's been around, but imagine a fleet of insect-sized drones who have the ability to spray over an area, and you get a football field-sized thing of that over your...
Drones? They got remote-controlled cockroaches, for God's sake.
That's what I'm talking about, insect-sized drones. That's what I'm talking about. Now, you imagine that over your... So when you talk about that kind of warfare and stuff, I think all of the major powers are looking at it like, you can't get behind or something like that.
The Japanese had plans to introduce botulinum toxins and plague off the coast of San Francisco right before the atomic bomb was dropped. The atomic bomb being dropped short-circuited those plans, but they were planning to do it. They were going to break one of those fleet-going submarines near the coast, and they were going to launch because they could carry aircraft. They had submarines that had a little hangar in them. They carried one or two aircraft, and they were going to surface about 200 miles off the coast, send these aircraft on a one-way mission, and just drop all kind of toxins like plague, botulinum toxin, all these anthological germs they've been working on. But the only thing that prevented it was the dropping of the bomb. They had the carriers ready to go. They had the pilots ready to go. And they had the biological. That's something that they really tried to keep hidden after the war. They didn't want people to know the Japanese were planning this.
No, but we were racist for putting them in camps. We, you know, we should have never snatched up the Japanese when they were in our country.
But those were Japanese. I mean, they weren't American citizens. Japanese were thinking of doing that, though. I mean, they were Imperial Japan who were doing it. They did not find one single evidence of a Japanese American actually involved in espionage. Now they found They found Japanese diplomats who were and who would come into the United States and insinuated themselves as like either lawfully resident Japanese or Japanese citizens, but they could not find one case of a Japanese American citizen who was engaged in espionage.
Well, they had Pearl Harbor. They did, Sarge. In Pearl Harbor, they did. I don't know if he was a citizen or not, but he owned a barber shop, and he was a spy.
Well, they had some of them who were involved in some of these Japanese nationalist programs. Some who were not citizens, or they were legally resident, and they were involved in all these Japanese nationalist affiliated agencies like the Dragon Society and others like that, and they were suspect in being surveilled by the FBI, and they definitely had sympathies with Imperial Japan, but concrete evidence of espionage was limited to Japanese diplomatic staff who were there on diplomatic credential. They were spying, no doubt about that.
So why take a chance?
Yeah, but the most evil...
Because it's unconstitutional. Because it was unconstitutional.
Right.
It was illegal to do it.
Exactly.
They weren't citizens.
That's what was wrong with
They're
not
citizens.
And how far did it go? Didn't they round up the Japanese that had... if your grandparents were from Japan, then you were included in it or something. I forget what it was, but... if you're an American citizen, you're an American citizen. It doesn't matter, that it was so unconstitutional to do that.
They weren't born citizens.
The Constitution doesn't get suspended. The Constitution doesn't get suspended in time of war.
Yes, they were. They were born here.
No.
It didn't matter.
The ones I'm talking about,
The ones I'm talking about getting snatched up are not natural-born citizens. Those are the ones I'm talking about getting snatched up.
You're
not a natural-born citizen. You've got
to
go.
Are you saying that all of those people who are in the internment camp American citizens,
no,
either by naturalization or because they were natural-born?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying only that the people that were not natural-born citizens should be gone, should go. You can't trust them.
Well,
a naturalized citizen has all the rights of a natural-born citizen in a time of war. I just said, not a naturalized citizen. In a time of war, if you're not a naturalized citizen, you got to go.
Nope.
If you're at war with that country,
values are values. Those values don't change in the midst of war or in the midst of tough times. Otherwise, what's the whole point?
Well, then why not let the Mexicans over from the border down there then? Hey, why not? Hey, let's let them all over.
Wait a minute.
You can't
Joe is right about one thing. Look, Joe, what Joe says, if you're not a citizen, if you're an enemy alien, even if you're here lawfully, you can be interned in times of declared war. Now, that's just not an argument about
that.
Done.
The thing the United States done, they interned all of them, and a lot of them lost their property. Matter of fact, one hotel chain got started because the Japanese sold his hotel, motel-like, to this, I forget the American's name, for like $100, $250 or something, and he began a hotel chain.
How did they keep track of people back then? How did they keep track of people back then, you know? I mean, it was probably a lot of things.
We're not arguing about interning enemy aliens. I mean, the Japanese interned Americans who were American citizens over in Japan, and many of them they exchanged through the Red Cross during the war. So, I mean, we don't have an argument with interning enemy aliens. They interned Italians. They interned Germans who were German and Italian citizens who happened to be in the States on the Declaration of War. We ain't talking about that. We're talking about people who are American who got interned. However they became American citizens.
Well, hold on, Sarge. You don't win the Cold War with that mindset. Matter of fact, Joseph Stalin's ghost is laughing right now saying, see, I told you, the Americans will give away all of those freedoms and principles and everything at the first sign of trouble. That would be what Joseph Stalin would use to describe the Americans. So if you fall by that mindset and say, okay, during times of war, we have to take these drastic liberties with the idea of citizens and everything else, that's the Russians' argument. That Americans were never
surrender the protections that the Constitution offers you. Now, if you want to give up your citizenship, what do they call that? I can't think of the name of it. Well, you can go about
renounce your citizenship.
Yeah.
But that's a lengthy process. You just can't do that overnight.
No. No matter
the United States has a policy. The United States has a policy. They will not allow you to renounce your citizenship unless you can show when you renounce it, you won't be a stateless person. You got to have another country that's going to take you as a citizen.
No, I know some people. I knew a woman who was stateless, so that did happen. But one thing they won't let you renounce if you owe them taxes.
that's probably true.
Yeah, I knew a lady that renouncer.
Remember, what's his name tried? The so-called JFK assassin. He tried to renounce his citizenship.
Oh, yeah. Oswald. Yeah, he did.
Oswald didn't kill JFK.
I tell you something else, too. You can't renounce your children's citizenship neither until they do it themselves after they become grown. 18.
That's right. You can't.
Oswald was a patsy. He was got sold out.
Well, that's why I said so called assassin.
Poor guy.
I said he tried to renounce his citizenship.
Yeah, when he went to Moscow, when he went to Russia, he tried to do it. Yeah.
Why did he go to Russia?
He went to Russia to study there. He had Marxist sympathies. I mean, the guy was saying he was a Marxist when he was in the Marine Corps. Now, think about a guy in the Marine Corps telling everybody he's a Marxist.
Really, Sarge, was he? Did he really say that?
Yes, he did. His platoon mate said he said.
He probably
I mean, people who served with him said that he was proudly telling them about his Marxist sympathies in discussion. In bull sessions. You know,
so why would you do that, Sarge?
You know how guys get together and have bull sessions?
Yeah, why would a guy do that, Sarge? Why would somebody do
that?
Now, that's an interesting question. Why? Yeah, I gotta wonder, why would a guy in the Marine Corps talk some shit like that? But according to multiple people, that's what he said. I mean, these were like privates and corporals who were hearing him saying this. They ain't like officers or anything.
Matter of fact, if you say that in the Marine Corps, you must really be able to fight.
In the 60s?
Right?
Wait a minute. Well, in the early 1960s or late 50s? Oh, shit.
Yeah,
that really sounds suspicious.
Yeah, this is...
Well,
you
had a lot of blacks that
off,
was coming in.
This is coming with this, the whole Oswald deal is coming right after the whole thing about, I don't want to say the Red Scare, but the whole thing with Senator McCarthy.
Saying you're a Marxist in 2020 is no big deal in the Army today. Look at that West Point cadet who was proud and talking about how he was a commie. They finally kicked his ass out, but he was commissioned and everything else talking about how he was a Marxist. But they didn't kick him out. He didn't get discharged. But it took him a little while to get rid of him.
And they shouldn't. Yeah, they shouldn't kick him out. Let him stay.
Look at what's his name? Alexander Vindman. All right? That guy, you know, basically is the same thing. Look at fucking, now he's not in the military, but Bernie Sanders did his honeymoon in Moscow somewhere. You know, so we got these guys that are Marxists all over the place. I mean, I like to say that Senator McCarthy is turning over in his grave because he's
the old Bernie Sanders. Where is he? He's been very quiet.
Well, he got bought off.
Look, the problem with McCarthy wasn't that he was wrong about the extent of Marxist and communist infiltration in the United States government. He did exaggerate it, but it was there. The problem with him was he went after the wrong target, not the fact that he was right about a significant infiltration into the State Department by communists and actual communist agents working for the working for Moscow. He just went after the wrong target. He was careless with the brush that he painted with.
Well, that's lying, Sarge. You just did a beautiful way of explaining lying. But the other part of it is, if you're America, land of the free, home of the brave, you can't go into Stalinist tactics of this is wrong think. No, you got to let those citizens be what they are, even if you disagree with them. So the idea of McCarthyism, the problem is once you turn citizens against each other, that's when you have huge problems, not only with society, but figuring yourself out politically. So, yeah, you can have a Marxist or whatever in the Army, in the government. You can have your Bernie Sanders. Hell, he just did an interview the other day. He got pressed on Israel, and, of course, he backed down. He wouldn't. He would just say, well, I hope a ceasefire happens, but he wouldn't say anything, you know, kind of concrete. So the left
is
kind of beating up Bernie.
Again? How come he didn't run for president again? I thought he really won.
Well, my point is, you guys are saying a political ideology should not be allowed, and in America, all have to be allowed.
I don't think that I said that. That's not what I said.
Well, I mean,
not
that's
what
you're inferring.
No, it's not what I'm inferring. I'm flat out saying
you can't speak against the Constitution.
That there is nothing wrong with pointing out the extent of Marxist and communist infiltration in the government, because it is opposed to American values. Now, that doesn't mean you got to take judicial action against the person simply because you point out that there are communists and people with communist sympathies, not that you're going to take judicial action against them, but there is nothing whatsoever. Hell, they call the MAGA people insurrectionists, don't they? Terrorists? Domestic terrorists?
I'm a terrorist.
Please, there is nothing at all wrong with pointing out people with Marxist sympathies if, in fact, that's what they have.
So point it out.
They call me a terrorist.
Uh-huh.
You know, you had a lot of black civil communists coming up. Matter of fact, it was the Communist Party that argued for the Scottsboro Nine when the NAACP would not do it. They provided the defense.
True.
The boys were communists.
They had a big
Paul Robeson was. Yeah, that was in Alabama. They were taking a freight train, hitching a freight train, Hoboken up to the north, and these two white women was on there too, and they said that those men berated them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But look, there were people working on a Scottsboro case and knew that those boys were being done an injustice, and that's fine. I got no problem with that. But you and I both know that Marxists love to exploit class division, and there was no avenue for them more ripe than the racial injustice that was being perpetrated in this country at the time. And they took full advantage of it to the extent that they could. Let's not kid ourselves.
They did.
Yeah, Paul Robeson was outwardly communist. W.E.D. Du Bois was communist. A whole lot of
them. They took his passport. They took Du Bois' passport. They wouldn't let him leave the country.
Hell, look at Angela Davis. She was a Marxist communist.
Yeah. They said Lucky Luciano was, too.
No, he wasn't a communist. Oh, no, not a gangster. Wow. Ain't communist. Gangsters are criminals, but they ain't communists. They really – no, they got a problem with being communists now. No. Not gangsters. Because, look, fascists and communists have a habit of wiping out gangsters because they want to be the only gangsters in charge. Look at what Mussolini did. Look at what Mussolini did to the mafia in Sicily.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hell, look what Hitler did to the left in Germany.
They want to be the only gangsters, man. Fascists and communists are gangsters. They want to run the whole gangster show.
Why do Mussolini have so much power? How do you get so much power, Mussolini?
The March on Rome.
A country down.
The March on Rome. The dissatisfaction with the aftermath of World War One. That's how he got it. Just like Hitler did.
Yep.
The Italian people were very dissatisfied. With what happened in Rome after World War One, just like Germans were dissatisfied with the Versailles Treaty and the way they got treated. Both of those dictators came into power under very similar circumstances.
Mm-hmm. But what role did the Italians have in World War One, Sarge? What role did they have?
Yeah, but it's like the perfect roadmap for an authoritarian to take over. A country that feels like it's been done wrong and whatever negotiations and is experiencing some kind of economic distress, that's the perfect time for a populist leader to come in and, you know, say mantras and motto.
Mussolini was a maniac. He tried to wage war against Ethiopia, and Menelik whooped his ass.
Oh, yeah, the Italians were terrible.
Well, I'm going to tell you now, Mussolini was a megalomaniac, ain't no doubt about that. He had an ego that was way beyond the capacity of his country to do what his ego wanted it to do. But when it came to being an intellectual, despite all of his silly-looking bombastic theatrics when he was giving speeches, he was a genuine intellect. He was. He spoke six languages. He was a man of letters. He was literary. If you read some of his writings, they are careful examinations of what he believed to be socialism. He was an intellect. The problem was that he had a country that was not ready for the war that he tried to thrust it into. That
That was his problem.
Yeah, but but being a smart monster doesn't change the fact that you're a monster. So he's a monster.
Well, I didn't say he wasn't a monster now. I'm just saying he was a genuine intellect.
Yeah.
Lenin. Lenin was an intellect, too. Wait a minute. Lenin was a monster. He was an intellect, too.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, you had, what was that black pilot's name? Hubert Julian. He went to Ethiopia to help develop their Air Force when they was fighting Italy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the most amazing battle victories of all time. You're basically building your Air Force at the moment in real time and all your defenses to beat a modern army or just to hold off a modern army. I mean, that's amazing what they did. Battle of Aden.
They had three aircraft. Hey, they had three airplanes in Ethiopia, and he wrecked one of them, for Christ's sake.
He was scheduled to make a transatlantic flight a year before Lindbergh. But his plane crashed.
Yeah, I mean, I know he was trying to do something over there in Ethiopia, but he didn't have nothing to work with. The entire Ethiopian Air Force was three airplanes. None of them were actually combat aircraft.
But hold on. So how do you – well, I ain't even going to say that. Just put it in these terms. That victory is one of the greatest military victories of all time. A modern army.
Which victory did they – they got defeated in 1936.
They got defeated. At the Battle of Agua.
Yeah,
that was in 1898. Wait a minute, that was in 1898. Yeah, that was before Mussolini.
Yeah, but
that was in 1898.
Just the fact that they were able to do it, and if you want to get to the Mussolini one, I mean, hell, they served themselves well. That wasn't the situation that it should have been. What should have been, they were overran and occupied. That's what it should have been. Like looking at the two sides.
The Italians,
they took Ethiopia in a couple of months. I mean, it wasn't like they took them that long. I mean, they had more casualties than they should have had, but they took it pretty quickly.
The Italians, the Spanish, and the Portuguese, they couldn't fight themselves out of a wet paper bag. You know, Ghanaians enslaved Portuguese. In Ghana, West Africa, the Ghanaians enslaved Portuguese. You learn a lot hanging around us.
Right. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but you're right about the Battle of Adowa, though. That was a military disaster for the Italians. I mean, they just thoroughly screwed that one up. They threw away every advantage they had, and the Ethiopian commander was very canny. And exploited the stupidity of the Italian commanders. And it was an improbable victory. There was no way, given the advantage the Italian army had, that they should have lost that battle. But through much better generalship and much more aggressiveness, they won.
There's a movie about it. Battle of Iowa by Holly Garina. You can watch the movie. It's really good. But
it's very interesting, yeah. Yeah.
Just thinking about this, when y'all talking about the Italians, the Germans do all this planning. How in the hell did they end up with an ally like Italy and then the Japanese who are so far away that they can't even contribute in the ways that actually matter? So every other month, Italy is saying, hey, we need this, we need that, because when this happened, and like, why the hell did they choose them?
Here's how that happened. It was Mussolini who got Hitler. First of all, they signed the Tripartite Pact in 1940. Japanese, Italians, and Germans. You know, they all agreed to come to each other's mutual defense should one of them be attacked. And Mussolini saw what Hitler's army had done to France in six goddamn weeks. Nobody could believe it. Nobody in the world ever thought the mighty French army, supposedly the most powerful army in Europe in 1940, was going to fall in 6 weeks. So Mussolini looked at this and said, oh, my goodness, I need to clean up and get on some of these spoils. And without telling Hitler about it, he just declared war on France. And he decided to pick up coming in from the south, taking as much of France as he could. Because, you know, France, I mean, Italy shared in the occupation of France. He was like picking over France's carcass. That's how he got involved in there. And then Mussolini saw it as an opportunity
to expand the Italian Empire in North Africa and the Balkans. And guess what? His army wasn't, so what did Hitler have to do? Hitler was, look, Hitler had a great affection for Mussolini. Mussolini, in many, many respects, was his mentor as to how to seize power. He looked at the way Mussolini did, and he repeated many of the things that Mussolini did. He had a great affection for Mussolini. Yeah, he had reservations about the Italian army, but nonetheless, he said, look, Mussolini's my guy. I got to bail him out. He went in there, and he bailed him out with the Africa Corps. Well, he sent Rommel down there in the Mediterranean. He wasn't interested in going in the Mediterranean, not right then, but it was Mussolini got him dragged into it. Mussolini got him dragged into the Balkans, born in Yugoslavia, taking Greece. Why? Because his army was getting their asses kicked down there. So he had to send in the Wehrmacht to bail him out. And that put his timetable for Operation Barbarossa back by about 4 weeks. And that was critical to why the Germans didn't get into Moscow.
Yep.
You could say the Italians might have cost them the war in the East.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but
well,
you gave the reasons why Mussolini would want the pact. Again, the reasons why the Germans would want it. That's where it gets ridiculous. Logistically, Japan can't help you.
Hitler's affection for him. Hitler's affection for Mussolini. That's what it was.
So that's where we get into
the Hitler, believe it or not, a lot of people think of Hitler as he was this evil bastard. But he's also very sentimental about a lot of things. If he had a liking for you, put aside a lot of logical decisions and just go with his emotions. He was kind of an emotional kind of dude. He was this German intellect and writer, a guy named Ernst Jünger. He wrote, he was a philosopher, a warrior poet kind of. He had joined the Foreign Legion before World War I. When he went into World War I, he had won every, he was like the Audie Murphy of the German Army of World War I. He won every high decoration you could possibly get. Poorly married, Iron Cross, first class, a whole bunch of times. He was wounded 7 times. His combat memoir reads like an Audie Murphy story. I mean, it's unbelievable what this guy did. Many times he got wounded. And he wrote of the war as sort of a transcendental Nietzschean experience. That doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And the Nazis thought he'd be a natural ally, given the way he wrote. But he hated the Nazis. He hated National Socialism. And he hated Hitler. And he was doing things that were actually anti-Hitler, and it came to Hitler's attention that he had knowledge of the assassination plot because he had gone back into the German army and was a member of the staff in Paris. And he was in contact with people who were actually trying to assassinate him. But because they were both, he looked at Jünger as a trench war hero of the First World War, a comrade like he was, because Hitler was in the trench too from the very beginning to the very end, I mean in the thick of it, and he had this sentimental attachment to Jünger. So anybody else, he would have had him strung up with chicken wire and hung from a hook and watched it and filmed the death struggles and enjoyed it. But with Jünger, he said, he told the Gestapo and the SS, nothing happens to Jünger. That's the way he was. He was erratic. You never knew what he was going to do because he was so goddamn emotional.
Well, you know, the German people hated them Jews because of their banking practices. Germans used to complain, we got money in the bank, and we can't, our own money in the bank we can't get out. And they came up with that practice of the gold certificates. Gold is a heavy object. So it was deposited in these banks, these German banks, not the Jewish banks. I'm sorry, the Jewish banks. They hated them Jews because of their practice. They deposited their gold in the Jewish banks. The Jew banker would give them a certificate. He seen how easy it was to scam people with that. They start issuing certificates and didn't have no gold to back it. That's the same thing black Americans complain about in their city. We got money in the bank. We can't get our own money out to start businesses.
Yeah, but remember that treaty, which basically meant they were paying France. And the Germans just destroyed their own economy because at a certain point it became unlivable because of how much you had to pay to France. Then France sent tanks to Germany. And I mean, this is, you kind of write the story on how somebody like Hitler could rise. You get all that social problems going on, especially, like you said, with Jewish folks who you kind of, in their mind, see as the bank. And then you get this monetary problem going, to where, you know, one out of every $5 is basically going to France. That's basically what your economy
France
is.
Continues,
and try
France
to have an economy
that
like that.
Today. France continues that today with the CIFA Pact that they entered in
African
countries back in the 1950s, and they still today control the economy of about 14 Francophone African countries even today.
Yep.
And look what they've done to Haiti. It made Haiti pay, France made Haiti pay it reparations because Haiti defeated France, Spain, and Britain.
Yeah, but look, man, you got to remember.
No, this is true. France made Haiti pay it. I forget how many hundreds of millions of dollars because Haiti defeated them. And they saying because they got was defeated, they lost out of the opportunity to exploit slave labor in Haiti.
Haiti was 40% of their economy at the time. So, yeah, they lost huge. And they made them pay reparations. And what they couldn't take in gold, they took in, you might as well say, natural resources. So that's why Haiti, when you fly over and see Haiti and Dominican Republic, that's why all the trees damn near are in the Dominican Republic, and Haiti is deforested. And that's why France is now famous for furniture. Oh, good French furniture, mahogany and all that good wood and all that stuff. Man, that didn't come from France. It came from Haiti. They took their pay in any way that they could get. So, yeah.
Somebody earlier mentioned about mustard gas. You had two Germans that was responsible for mustard gas. One name is familiar with you. One guy's name was Fritz Haber, and the other was named Carl Bosch. Yes, Bosch, like Bosch spark plugs, ignition coils, and so on, so on, so on. Bosch was Bosch loved Germany, so they were scientists. Matter of fact, the process for making ammonia today, ammonia and urea, is still used by the process that they developed, you know, back during the times that they was around. It's called the Haber-Bosch process that's used to create ammonia using natural gas.
What if, Sarge, what if Hitler never attacked Russia? There would be, you know, you got to look at it like that. What if he just kept their treaty? How would that have played out? England would have never defeated Germany.
Germany would be much bigger than what it is right now. How would that have played out?
Well,
Hitler was always gonna have it in his mind to attack Russia anyway. So that's a non-starter. And what if
as late as 1918, Germany had the Allied powers on the rope. I mean, the Ludendorff offensive came within a hair's breadth. The spring offensive came within a hair's breadth defeating the British and the French. They made the biggest single breakthrough of the war. They broke through 50 miles of front. Nope, never been a breakthrough the whole war that much. They just ran out logistically, and they were hoping they were going to defeat them before the United States could get all their troops across the water. And unfortunately for the Germans, they just weren't able to carry it through. But if the Americans had been there, they would have renewed their offensive in the summer of 1918, and they would have gotten to Paris. What saved them was the Americans coming in. That's what it was.
Right, no question. No question. But
it hadn't been for the United States, they probably still were fighting the war.
Oh, no question. But remember this, too, with the Germans, though. You had Hitler and his biases against Slavs and people he saw as less than, which, of course, was especially the Russians. He wrote about them extensively. The other part was, to fuel this war machine, they needed the oil and natural gas of Russia, period, because Germany didn't have colonies like France and England did, which gave them the supplies that, you know, they didn't naturally produce. So you can never forget that part. Like, that was always...
They had oil in Romania. They had plenty of oil in Romania.
Yeah, that's not plenty of oil, brother, when you're talking about war on the scale he's talking about. And then, you know, remember this part, too. Stalin was not this dupe who believed that Hitler was going to hold the treaty. Stalin was biding time. He understood. I think some of the Western writers about Stalin are really unfair in the way that they describe
him
as kind of elite and just believe old Hitler and just Adolf is going. We're going to do a carve up of Germany and England and France together. Like I don't think Stalin was that naive. I think he knew.
Yeah, I agree.
Eventually.
No. Well, here's what he did, though, Nash. You're right about that. He knew eventually he was going to be fighting Germany and the Nazis. What he did think, though, was that Adolf would stick to the terms of the non-aggression pact. That he did believe. But he knew eventually he was going to be fighting the Nazis, and he was preparing for it. But the problem was that Operation Barbarossa was launched long before the Red Army was ready, considering the fact that he purged his own army and got rid of his best generals and leaders. 50,000 Red Army soldiers got purged, including the best minds amongst them.
They had 25-year-old upper-tier management because of the purge, because of how many they got rid of.
50,000!
Now, that's a bastard.
And one of the biggest ones he killed was a guy named Tukhachevsky, who was forward-thinking. He was experimenting with airborne warfare, a deep battle armored tactics, kind of a Russian version of the Blitzkrieg. I mean, he was very charismatic. He was highly intelligent. I mean, he was, and that's what worried Stalin. That made him paranoid. And then the Germans put the nail in his coffin by actually conducting a rather brilliant intelligence coup. Reinhard Heydrich planted poison pills in the Russian intelligence about these guys who were totally innocent. Stalin, being as paranoid as he was, just went out and used that as an excuse to butcher him. He was nervous about Tukhachevsky anyway. He thought he might be a genuine rival for him because of his undoubted charisma and intelligence.
Look, if Stalin wasn't careful, he would have killed himself.
You're right about that, That's how
he's probably paranoid about himself.
Now, I'm telling you, man. And that's why that Khrushchev story, like, kind of rains out. There's that story about Khrushchev where he's up there and he's talking shit about Stalin, about all the things he did and all that. And somebody in the crowd yells out, well, why didn't you say anything, you know, then? And Khrushchev just, over the whole crowd, he says, who said that? Everything gets quiet, nobody moves. And he says, now you see why. I didn't say anything. Put the fear, that same fear into them in that moment, and they understood. Like, when you got an authoritarian dictator who's out of control, there's no dissonance. There's no saying anything. There's no, like, none of that. You got to try Valkyrie to take that dude out, or that's it.
Now, a lot of the shit that's going on in the world today, if you laid all the names on a piece of paper, it would be the same goddamn name. And that's why I keep saying it's going to be sooner or later that time's going to run out. Israel's time will run out. And see, what happens is people commingle Bible stories with a piece of geographic land that was never meant to be. It was created in order for exploitation of people's minds and sentiments and emotions.
No, it
wasn't. And Pianti, are you seeing some of those young officers in this Israeli army? I'm seeing 23-year-old officers, 25-year-old. You're like, what? How the hell you get officers that young?
Nas. I mean, wait a minute. When you talk about junior officers, they're always that age range. I don't care what war you're talking about. They're always that age.
I'm talking about Israel now. No, not junior officers. You'll see it. Go online.
You're talking about like regimental and division commanders and up?
Yeah, man. It's getting real bad for them, man. It's getting real bad. Because a lot of, you know, these civilian so-called soldiers that they have just ain't worth a damn. So when it comes to fighting Hamas and actually going in those tunnels and actually fighting, it's a whole other ball game, man. They're taking casualties left and right. Now, when it comes to killing civilians, oh, they're doing that by the boatload. But when it comes to actual warfare,
now hold on.
Trouble,
no
man.
Way. No, there is no way any army, I don't care who it is, is going to fight against a determined opponent in the rubble of an urban built-up area without it being bloody and hard as hell. Now, you might be able to do that against somebody who's not fanatical, but Hamas, one thing I got to give them, they are fanatical, they're determined to hold their ground, and it doesn't matter who your enemy is, whether it was Japan, the Japanese in Manila, whether it was the Russians in Stalingrad, whether it was the North Koreans in Seoul, I don't care who you're talking about. If your enemy is determined and he's dug in the rubble, he's going to inflict harm on you. And they are determined to do it. And there is no way you're going to be able to dig him out of that rubble without inflicting civilian casualties, particularly when your enemy will not let them evacuate. It's not possible.
Who would you say they let them evacuate? They do.
Who would you say is the most fierce fighting force that we've seen in modern times? Say what?
The most fierce fighting force that we've seen in my – I'm going to have to say Germany. I don't know
if
somebody else.
If I'm going to pick somebody for battlefield execution, for doctrinal excellence, battlefield execution, and mid-level management, I would say, yeah, the German Army. Now, you've been – but then you can't ignore all the weaknesses they had at other levels that did weaken their war effort. Like, they were run by a nut at strategic level, the very top level of command, and then they had a logistical problem. Their intelligence wasn't that good, even though it had flashes of brilliance. And they never developed a heavy strategic bomber program, and they didn't have a surface navy that was capable of competing with the British.
That's why I said World War I and World War II.
But as far as battlefield execution, tactical competence, a standardization of training, I mean, the German army was about as good as it got right up to, say, 1944. By then, the American army...
I don't know, Sarge. Sarge, they took on a lot of casualties when they made that 6 weeks into France, man. They took on a lot of casualties because they just went in like a bunch of nut jobs,
That's not true. There is no way you're going to fight against a determined enemy. The hardest combat there is fighting in a built-up urban area with an enemy dug into rubble. There is Monte Cassino. I rest my case.
The United States soldier is the best soldier.
There is no combat that is tougher than that.
United States, I would give, their soldiers had the heart to fight. But them Germans were some bad motherfuckers, boy.
No doubt about it. I mean, for tactical execution, I got to give it to the Kraut.
You're skipping over World War One Germany, which may be a better army than World War Two. May not have accomplished.
The World War Two army was actually better. You do realize that every army in the world has adopted tenets of what the Germans call fighting. Which is true leadership.
Yeah, but
it was developed in the Franco-Prussian War. That's when it started Mission Objective Command, and they enhanced it all the way through World War II.
So you ever heard of the Von Sleeping Plan? The Sleeping Plan.
Yeah, it was the right hook around Paris, guys. The grenadier on the right flank should brush the channel with his sleeve. Go around Paris and come in from behind. Yeah.
Right.
What? Guys, the so-called win in World War One, which was a win, but the so-called win in World War One was based on a lie. Think about this. Remember, America got into World War One, right? They went over and helped win World War One, right? But what happened before that? Before that, there was an election that happened with the evil bastard that was Woodrow Wilson, who lied to the American public and said he was not going to get us into World War One. What happened after he gets elected? He gets us into World War One.
Didn't he have a choice, though?
I think. Well, look,
did he
I think
have a choice?
was one of the worst presidents we've ever had, but I'm going to have
to
give
him a bit
of a pass on that one.
To ever live on Earth.
But look, if you take the combination of the Zimmerman telegram and the resumption by the Germans of unrestricted submarine warfare, I don't think any president could have done anything else than to go to Congress and ask for a declaration of war against Germany. I mean, the Zimmerman telegram alone would have been enough. The Zimmerman telegram, which was not set up, it was true, it's been historically verified. It was sent by the German foreign minister to the president of Mexico, telling them, if you come into war on our side, we will give you back all those territories they took from you in the Mexican-American War. And you know, then the Germans resumed unrestricted submarine warfare after saying they weren't going
to. Which is the bigger part, though, Sarge, than the telegram. Because ultimately, you're lending
resuming
all of this money.
Submarine warfare.
Yeah. Because at that point, think about it. You're lending all this money to France and England, and how are they going to pay you if they continue to go the route that they're going? So eventually, I don't think it mattered who was president. I think we were getting in no matter what. So
well, I agree with
that. Pre-election, it was easy to say that, but.
Look, you got to remember, what did Roosevelt say? He said he's not going to send American boys to fight in any European war. And guess what? Germany declares war on the United States. What else is he going to do? Ignore it? No.
Exactly.
He's got to go. Hitler declared war on the United States. If Hitler had not declared war on the United States, Roosevelt would not have asked for a declaration of war against Germany at that, and not at that time anyway.
Yeah. At the time, but eventually
it was declared war because basically he had to, because once Pearl Harbor happened, well there you go, you know.
The United States didn't have to declare war on Germany. Even the Germans didn't even have to honor the Tripartite Pact, because the Tripartite Pact said that the signatories were only obligated to come to the aid of another if they were attacked. Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. Hitler was under no obligation to declare war on the United States. He just saw it as his opportunity because the Japanese had the Navy that he didn't have, and they would tie up the United States, whom he figured eventually would get in the war anyway. But look, once he declared war on the United States, that's it. All bets are off. There's no other choice for the United States but to go ahead and declare war on Germany. You can't ignore a declaration of war from one of the major powers on the planet.
And somebody asked, who is the best soldier? I'll give you one name. Alex Dumas. This is the father of the guy who wrote The Three Musketeers and all of that stuff. Alex Dumas.
Well,
look him up. French soldier.
Well, that was a long way from World War II.
Well, no. He said who is the best soldier ever. So I just wanted to throw Alex Dumas in there.
I love
it. Y'all look up his
expert. I'd have to go with Alexander the Great. If you're going to talk about that, you got to go with Alexander the Great. He never lost a campaign.
I'm going to say,
how are you going to beat that?
Hold on. He had his father's army. That's basically Philip's army. Alexander gets a lot of credit for winning those battles, but come on. That's Philip's generals. That's Philip's army. Philip's strategy. Like, get out of here, man. That's his dad.
If you got an inept leader, you could squander all that. Not only did Alexander have the charisma, he had the smarts to lead that excellent army to victory, and he did with brilliantly executed campaign.
And he also had the ignorance of extending that army too far to where not only did they lose the game, but his generals ended up infighting and fighting over the territory that they gained. Look up Alex Dumas,
That's not really the fault. I don't think
D-U-M-A-S.
He still wasn't defeated, though. Now, Napoleon might come in maybe second, third, or fourth on the list, even though he made some blunders. But look, that guy had so many brilliant campaigns against overwhelming odds. It's hard to recount all of his victories before the disaster in Russia. I mean, the guy was looking like an unstoppable force.
Yeah, Napoleon's up there. Genghis Khan is up there. It's a lot.
He could perfectly time when to strike on one opponent, neutralize him, and then get his force to wheel around and go hit the other guy. He was able to defeat his enemies in detail separately because. because of the way he maneuvered his army. I mean, that was singularly what nobody else could do as well as he could. You got to also remember that if Haiti had not defeated France, France didn't have no money. That's why come they entered into the Louisiana Purchase that the United States is the best real estate deal ever to happen.
Yeah.
France was out of money. Napoleon didn't have no money. Money.
Yep. Yeah, didn't have money. Well, I tell you, he made up for it, though. I mean, he almost got that continental system established where nobody on the continent would be allowed to trade. But look, he made up for it with all of his victories.
Well, I mean, his stuff goes beyond military, though, because you got the Napoleonic reforms, which a lot of people constructed their state based on some of those ideas. But, again, we got to go with Genghis Khan. If we're doing territory, Genghis Khan, longest extended territory period at one time.
True. They had the greatest land empire in history, but they were going against a bunch of – and the Mongol cavalry was unparalleled. It was best in the world, most ways about it. I'll give you that. But you got to remember, they were going against scattered tribes of people who weren't even really united in any real sense. And he was able to treat them piecemeal, and over time,
Andrew Jackson.
The Hungarians, all those people, you know, and many of the Chinese principalities, they were not able to mount a united front against the Mongols. The Mongols were steppe nomads. They were great cavalrymen. They knew how to maneuver. I mean, yeah. So I got to kind of qualify the Mongols.
The Chinese did get together. That's how they built the wall. The Yan Chinese got
Russia,
the Chinese, and that's how they built
Russia's,
the wall. He still overcame
it. Russia's best generals was General January and General February.
you got to give Rokossovsky, Vatutin, and Zhukov a bit of credit, too. They were very good generals, very capable
generals.
And
also Russian women. Russia uprooted factories. The women, and they uprooted factories and took them further into the Siberian winter, into the permafrost that was down about 6 foot into the ground. That was a marvelous feat.
They're beating those women.
And they
could do some work now.
They were good, man.
Oh,
yeah.
They're some hardy women, man.
They're men. They're beasts.
Where does Castro rank on y'all list? Because for that little island to be that much of a problem in the backside of the greatest military in the world, nah, man, you got to get out of here.
I tell you where he ranks.
Look what he was up against. He was up against one of the most corrupt governments everywhere. His troops had no morale whatsoever. I mean, he blew the opportunity he had to wipe them out when they landed in Sierra Madre, the Maestro Mountain. He had a wiped out except for nine of them. And actually, Castro didn't really fight any pitched battles in that war. Really, he won through intimidation and psychological operation. Now, I'm not saying that doesn't mean that doesn't count just as much because he won. It enabled him to get victory. But as far as battlefield generalship, no, he didn't show much of that. He showed an ability to master the psychological and the morale aspect.
Which is a bigger game plan, because then you're talking about not only do you have to unseat Batista, but you have to, with the intervention of other states, you have to overcome them, take power, and then hold it up long enough with everything coming from the United States to where you can be a legitimate state. Like that dude, people can say what they want to say about him, man. That's one of those guys when it comes to history.
If I was going to give him credit, though, for fighting on the battlefield, I'll give him credit for what he did during the Bay of Pigs. He didn't screw anything up. He captained that fairly well, so I'll give him credit for that.
Hold that thought for just a minute, please. We've got about less than 5 minutes left before my switchboard shuts down. So those of you who have been hanging out listening, I am going to unmute you on my end before the switchboard shuts down. So Nathan And we got Daniel and or Cassie and Cinnamon and a Skype number. I am unmuting you right now. Just stay muted on your end if you wanted us to continue listen. But like I said, I want to unmute you before I lose the ability to. And then if you do want to speak up, feel free to do so. Okay. Sorry to interrupt you guys. Continue, because this is great. This is a great conversation. I'm enjoying listening to this because I love these history lessons.
Well, yeah, you know, well, you talk about Castro. The CIA tried to recruit the mob to take them. And I think it was Lucky Gusiano, whatever his name was. He said, nope, those go after Castro, come back in bags. And they wouldn't do it. But they did recruit
all of Meyer Lansky stuff. They took all of Meyer Lansky stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, but Meyer Lansky helped to arm the anti-Castro resistance. He did help to get weapons for it. On the internet.
You had that one chemist. You had that one chemist who was the head of the CIA and also the head of MK Ultra. He was perfecting stuff, cigars that explode, and another chemical, I think, that went in his shoe paste that was supposed to make his beard fall out. So,
over 500 assassinations.
I'm a clownish, man.
Yeah, man. Y'all got to put that dude on the list, man. Stop hating. That dude's on the list. He's a bad man.
He was a bad man.
I'm not going to put him down one of the greatest captains of military history. No, I'm just not. I'll grant you that he did score some amazing coups, given what he had to come up against. But as far as being a battlefield captain,
he had
captain,
to leverage the USSR against the United States. Beautiful diplomacy in leveraging one against the other. He was smart.
Well, that's another story. I'm talking about being a battlefield captain. I mean, you know, yeah, he was Machiavelli, and he knew how to pull levers and all that. I'm grand.
William Wallace.
But
who's that?
Hell, they even turned to
the manner of Napoleon or Alexander the Great or Julius Caesar, Douglas MacArthur or somebody like that, or Von Manstein. You know,
I'm saying I agree with you on that. Yeah, militarily, they were advanced more than him, but when it comes to administering a state, that's a whole nother level of skill. That's beyond just doing the battlefield stuff. If you can do the battlefield stuff and that, you're a whole nother entity, but yeah,
well,
name somebody else.
I gotta admit, man, him holding out was something. Him holding out that long and keeping power the way he did was quite a feat. I got to give it to him in spite of everything that was thrown his way. But then again, he did have the Soviet Union backing him. That kind of helped him a bit too. He was a client of the Soviet Union for all that time.
Yeah, Sidney Goldsmith.
Who hated his guts.
That guy, Sidney Goldsmith, was working out of Fort Detrick, where they came up with all those experiments with LSD, trying to control people's minds and shit. He was a Hungarian Jew. But no, he came up with, they tried to recruit him to come up with ways to kill Castro. Castro was a lucky son of a gun, man, I tell you that.
Was it over 300 attempts or something like that? Yeah, man, that dude was amazing. You got to give it up to somebody who gets it done. But who else y'all got for the list? Start to Caesar. Yeah, you got to include Caesar. You got to include Caesar.
Got to. Can't leave him off the list.
Who?
Got to. Can't leave him off the list whatsoever. No, you cannot. He's up there at the apex. Shaka Zulu. I'm not going to leave off Shaka Zulu either. Shaka was a great captain.
Yep. Broken field running, changing the weapons, getting other tribes aside.
Training his men. The training and regimentation he gave to his men, that was singular.
He's a bad one.
They were very fit.
He
made them very fit and able to do what they needed to do.
Hold on, Bismarck from Germany. Bismarck, diplomatic genius, figures out ways to continually build up without pissing off the others enough to where they would invade or declare war on them.
Yeah,
and
right.
And he just decided if there's three world powers, be one of the two. Five world powers, be one of the three. His whole thing was diplomacy at all times. Bismarck, got to throw him
at all times.
Bismarck, the Iron Chancellor. The man was a diplomatic genius, and it was. And you know what? You know what enabled World War I? The people disregarded his advice on how to keep a diplomatic balance and keep the various factions of Europe in balance against each other, so nobody would go to war and mobilize. That's what he did, and they all decided to disregard it in the spring of 1914. I mean, the summer of 1914, when that Serb and the Black Hand assassinated Archduke Franz Ferdinand. Everything went to hell after that. Everybody forgot all that wisdom.
Yeah, because mobilization was everything. In that era, mobilization was everything. If you were late to mobilize and the other army already did, that's your ass. If you got behind in rifle technology in that period and the other groups got a little bit ahead of you, that's your ass. Like, you were done before the battle even started. So, yeah.
Well, I can go back into the ancient times of the Ursa Ma'at race of Tepenrara, Meshu Meriamun, and Men Kepera, who today. Ramesses led 4 divisions, 10,000 men each, against his fight against the Hittites at the Aronis River. 10,000 men each back in them days. That's why I come to this stuff about Israel is a bunch of fallacy. They controlled all that area. They would not let anybody of any substance exist. Matter of fact, Men Kepera Tehudi Mays warred against a country that even exists today called Megiddo. And he put a whooping on them so bad, that's where your terminology of Armageddon come from. They said that when it was all done, they said this is what it must look like when the end of the world comes about.
I want you guys to listen to this, because this came from the United States War Department producing a handbook on the Wehrmacht. Now, they wrote this while the war was still going on. And it's an assessment of the German army and why it fought the way it did. And I'm going to bring that forward to something I heard this guy named Douglas McGregor say about the United States Army today and what's going on with possibly a war against Russia. And this is what they wrote about the German army. After 5.5 years of ever-growing battle against ever stronger enemies, German army in 1945 looks at first glance much the worse for wear. It is beset on all sides and is short of everything. It has suffered appalling casualties and must resort to old men, boys, invalids, and unreliable foreigners for its cannon fodder. Its weapons and tactics seem not to have kept pace with those of the armies opposing it. Supply system in the field frequently breaks down. Its position is obviously hopeless. It can only be a question of time till the last German soldier is disarmed, and the once proud German army of the great and of Scharnhorst, of Ludendorff, and of Hitler exists no more as a factor to be reckoned with. Yet this shabby, war-weary machine has struggled on in a desperate attempt to postpone its inevitable demise. Despite the supposed chronic disunity at the top, disaffection among the officer corps, and disloyalty in the rank and file, despite the acute lack of weapons, ammunition, fuel, transport, and human reserves, the German army seems to function with its old precision and to overcome what appears to be insuperable difficulties with remarkable speed. Only by patient and incessant hammering from all sides can its collapse be brought about. The cause of this toughness, even in defeat, is not generally appreciated. It goes much deeper than the quality of weapons, the excellence of training and leadership, the soundness of tactical and strategic doctrine, or the efficiency of patrol at all echelons. It's found in the military tradition, which is so deeply ingrained in the whole character of the German nation and which alone makes possible the interplay of these various factors of strength to their full effectiveness. And remember, they're losing the war. They only got 2 months left before they surrender. They've been, like I said, they've been beset on all sides. They had defeat after defeat. They got all these casualties. And even the United States Army in the middle of the war recognized what made the German Army so goddamn hard to beat. And that brings us fast forward to today. People are acting like they want us to get in some kind of dust up with Russia. Remember, the Russians have not committed their reserves to Ukraine. You want to know why? Because they're holding those reserves in case NATO does something against Russia. And the United States Army had all this battlefield experience in the global war on terror. But this guy was listening to hearken it to the French Army before the Franco-Prussian War. The French Army had a great deal of experience in combat all around the world in its colonies, in Mexico, Remember the French Legion, the Battle of Cameroon, in Africa, in the colonies, all their colonies in North Africa, their colonies in Africa, Sub-Saharan Africa. You know, they had a great deal of fighting experience all around the world, but it was against people who were not peer armies. Now, when they went up against the Prussians in the Franco-Prussian War, they were soundly beaten by an enemy that had sound doctrine, sound tactics, and understood what it took to be a modern army fighting against a great state power. Badly defeated in the Franco-Prussian War was one of the reasons they tried to take such revenge after World War One. Similarly, the United States Army is now in a bad state of morale. They can't recruit anybody. They're dropping standards right and left. Our experience in the global war on terror was against goat herders, people who, were ragtag militias. I'm not saying they weren't worthy opponents. They didn't fight hard. They did. But they were hardly a peer army to the United States. They had no mechanization to speak of. They had no aircraft. They had no heavy artillery. They had none of that. And he said, now, similarly to what he analogized the United States Armed Forces right now roughly to what the French were before the Franco-Prussian War in their sound, complete defeat by the Prussians in 1870. And it made me think about it, and I said, yeah, he's got a real point here.
Yeah.
I don't want to get involved in no fight in Russia. I really don't. I don't want to go and fight in war in Europe. I don't know about you, but these people are getting us perilously close to that spot. And if we have to do it, for God's sake, will you get our armed forces to the state where they can do it? Please?
Look, and that's it. See, the next, if we had a war against Russia, you're going to have casualties on U.S. soil. If Russia exploded their, what they call it, Tsar Bomba, if it went off in Washington, D.C., people clean out to hell. Looking at this map, Baltimore, the people in Baltimore would be vaporized. They would be vaporized. Wellington, North Carolina, they would be vaporized.
Who has their phone on while they're snorkeling?
I mean, look, we do not want to be in that charnel house that is Ukraine. We don't want to go there. We don't want to be there. You know, it has nothing to do with us. This is a friggin' it's been a civil war for 1,000 years. I mean, if you've seen the thing, the Tucker Carlson interview with Putin got into the history of the Ukraine-Russia thing, going back 1,000 years. All right. We don't want to be there. I don't want to be there.
But we're not going to be there physically to that extent, though, man. If we were bogged down in a war, Russia would do the same thing in this instance. The idea is how much blood, treasure, and everything else can we make them expend? The plan isn't to win. Like, we all know that Russia's eventually going to win, and eventually they're going to have to sit down at the table and carve up how much of Ukraine they're going to take away. But the plan is to give them a bloody nose while they're doing it. Like, that's the whole point of this. It's not to get into a war with them. This is just another proxy war. And when we get into something somewhere else, guess what? Russia is not going to forget this, and they're going to try to supply the hell out of somebody in order to make ours more difficult. What Putin said at the beginning, this was a 6-month or 2-month thing. Here we are, 2 years later? That was the point. This ain't got nothing to do with Biden. This is the kind of stuff that decided before Biden or Trump or whoever sits in that chair is done. This is the old State Department guys, the old Cold War experience guys. This is them. And this is the kind of stuff that they do. So, I get what y'all saying, but... This ain't going to stop.
Not all that. You don't have the money to fight no wars. You're going to get the
money. We got plenty of money.
They print the Federal Reserve, central banks print the money for both sides.
What bank is in New York? You explode a bomb in New right outside of New York, all of New York is vaporized.
The central, there's nobody getting vaporized. Nobody's getting vaporized, trust me. Nobody's getting vaporized.
So you don't think
it's not gonna happen.
You go to Russia, you go to war with Russia, they're not gonna use its very best.
Who the heck's breathing? They're choking to death. Who needs oxygen machine?
They probably practicing when they can't breathe after that goddamn bomb
goes
off.
No bombs are going off in the United States. I can promise you that.
I mean, they're still...
they're not going to do it right away. But, look, any country that faces an existential threat to its survival is likely to use an atomic bomb. They're not going to do it right away. I don't think they're going to do that, but... You cannot eliminate it as a possibility. You just can't.
There's no possibility it's not going to happen. No.
Assured mutual destruction that will be delivered by submarines right off the East Coast.
There's no submarines.
Russia's got a lot of nuclear subs that are very difficult to track when they're underwater.
Yes, they do. But they're not. As soon as they come even halfway to the Atlantic, we know about it. So.
That's the point of a nuclear submarine. It is hard to track them.
One of the Russian submarines came up the goddamn Mississippi River. What was their tracking system then?
When was that? When was that? When did that happen? During Captain Kangaroo Hour? What are you talking about?
Well,
I don't remember that.
Well, look it up.
That's not true.
Yeah, it is. I looked it up. It's on YouTube. Go look it up.
Goddamn, Joe Gibson. Where the hell
YouTube
did you go get your military
tells the truth.
Joe Gibson.
YouTube always tells the truth.
Video.